My wife, she's going never again.
I guess one question needs to be asked, Popey.
I'm going to bed.
Mint can't be the only derivative that you know is a drain on Canonical's resources. So, are there? Do you think there will be other respins or not respins, but derivative distros that might be targeted to say, "Hey, you guys need to pony up."
Well, to be clear, I don't know if Mint were targeted and asked to pony up. I don't know if that's what they were asked, because I haven't seen the conversation. And I don't know how many other, in inverted commas, popular derivatives of Ubuntu there are, really.
Can I just do some technical stuff here?
Yeah, sure.
Can we sync up the recordings? Guys, can you leave your recordings running? I'd like to get some after show as well.
I just restarted mine.
And can I have, Soundchaser, you were here the whole time, can you copy the mumble chat into an email, please, and send it to me?
Are you putting that up on the site as well, the whole, like, mumble chat stuff? That's good, yeah.
And with that, I'm forced to go and spend time with my family. I know that sounds a lot worse than it actually is. Well, we'll leave as normal. We leave the stream running, and we'll put this out as an additional show at the end. Thanks, guys. It's been long.
It's been fun, though, Ken. Thanks a lot.
It has been fun.
And my body is demanding I go back to bed, so I'm
going
to say good night to everybody.
Yeah, bye. Trevor's evening. I want to quickly say something about Unity. Apparently, I remember trying out Mint before, and I thought, you know, it's so close to Ubuntu, I could stick in Unity. That's what I thought. But then when I tried about 3 years ago now, it's like that package could never ever get installed into Mint. It's like they blocked it or something. I don't know about now if that's the case, but or not. But that's what seemed to happen then. Is anyone still there?
I'm still around.
Alright, so just us now. It went really, really quiet, didn't it? Because people left.
Well, we still see them in the Mumble. All the folks that said they were going to leave, they're still here digitally, at least.
Yeah, Popey, did you go as well, Popey?
According to the Mumble chat, he's muted and deafened, so he can't even answer your question.
You need to unmute Popey, probably. Otherwise, it's not going to be much of an after thing, is there?
Well, I will credit Popey for being a good sport coming on and talking about this, because acknowledging he's not coming on as official Canonical representative, and all he knows is, you know, what he's seen in the media like we have, and it's all gone back to the one DistroWatch story where Clem says, you know, mentioned that Canonical had asked him something about a licensing fee, and I guess the licensing fee would be for Mint users hitting the Canonical repos. This past hour, I think Popey's been a real good sport coming on and at least given his opinion on where this might be going.
Yeah, I think we've lost pretty much everyone except for, like, maybe three of us.
Everyone's gone to sleep, are they?
Oh, yeah, you are here now. Did you hear what I said about Unity and Mint?
No,
or
I didn't.
Did you miss that?
I didn't hear that. I went away.
Yeah, I thought you might have missed that. What I basically said, and I wanted to say it before, but I remember trying out Mint, you know, probably about 3 years ago now when I was doing it, and I thought, you know, it's so close to Ubuntu, I can probably install Unity into Mint. So I tried to do that, like you would, you know, normally from the repo, and it just wouldn't install. It's like they blocked it or something. I don't know about now if they still do that or not, but, you know, if you would have thought you could run Unity and Mint as well, because it's so close to Ubuntu, but this wasn't the case then. I'm not sure about now.
So that highlights. So, what I mean, there are some issues where there's conflicts between various desktop components. So, for example, it was the case, you know, a few years ago that the same would happen if you tried to install GNOME Shell on Ubuntu that already had Unity on. It would mess up, and you log on to your GNOME Shell session, and it was messed up in some way.
Oh yeah, sure. But I'm saying I couldn't install Unity at all into Mint, right? I tried, I tried, and it didn't seem to work.
Right. So it's similar because, you know, Mint have their desktop with their own desktop components, and this actually highlights exactly why I said that they should put those things in the archive, because those kind of issues, those conflicts, should be detected when you put the package in the archive. You test things like, you know, is it possible to install this package and then install another package and them not conflict or not break each other, or is it actually installable, that kind of stuff. And because it's a derivative that has its own PPA or archive that has their own desktop in it, I suspect that that testing doesn't happen, because the whole point of Mint is that it isn't Unity. It is Cinnamon or Mate or whatever desktop they're using. It isn't Unity, so that test doesn't ever happen. I doubt they're actively, you know, blocking Unity installs on Mint. I suspect it's just that it's broken because of some conflict, and there's no motivation to fix it, because if someone wanted Unity, they'd run Ubuntu proper.
Yeah, I mean, it might be working now, but yeah. Although, but if some people want Cinnamon or Mate now, they can run different distros as well, but that's something else.
Yeah, but you don't try and take a Mint version of Cinnamon and try and install it on another distribution. It's a very, very oft-repeated suggestion and advice that don't take something from one distribution and try and install it on another distribution.
Exactly.
When I did that, my system would break.
But the problem is that people see Mint commonly said that it's a binary compatible with Ubuntu. So people believe they can just, you know, go and grab an Ubuntu package and install it on Mint, or grab a Mint package and install it on Ubuntu, and that may or may not succeed.
Well, then their ignorance will be cured. You know, I'm speaking from personal experience, not with Mint, but from other distributions that I've run. When I've mixed packages from outside the distribution, eventually I get to a point, if it doesn't happen immediately, eventually I get to a point where I either can't boot, or I can't get into X, or my desktop is all messed up, or something else is broken. It's just life.
Yeah, I mean, as a user, sure, you don't want to, shouldn't really mix from other distros, even when you got something very similar to, even if it's a fork distro at times, if you then take a package off the distro it was forked from as a user, you might bump into the issues. But, I mean, I'm not a packager, but I think when it comes to packaging, on the other hand, sometimes, packages, they do kind of, like, look at other distros and they kind of take the packages and then do the changes for their relevant distro, of course. But that's obviously different, because doing something as a user and as a packager, that's, you know, different when it comes to taking from the other distro.
And I can see where that's a bugaboo for Canonical, where they're trying to be Ubuntu for the every man, because somebody coming over from Windows, they're expecting, no matter how bad how much I try to screw up my desktop, it ought to just work. And when it doesn't work, they're coming back to you guys and saying, well, what did I do? How did I screw this up?
Are you saying people going from Windows? Or what was that?
Well, I'm saying people I consider power users, we if we mix and match stuff and then comes a day that we can't boot into X, we kind of take that in stride and back up our stuff and, if we have to completely wipe out what we've gotten and start with something else. But if you go for a typical Windows user, they expect everything that they click on to just work, and they are quite put out if they click on something and it completely screws up their system.
Wait, are you saying the OS should be that faulty that you click on the wrong thing and you hose your system? I mean, think about that.
I'm just saying if, you know, Canonical is trying to be, you know, the Linux for, you know, for the morons. Well, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, for the people trying something else, and it's hard to, it's difficult to be that when people are coming in with derivative systems and, you know, still expecting, you know, for Canonical to fix it for them.
Flying Rich, you will not believe how many times I've seen in IRC people saying, I installed such and such version of the NVIDIA driver and now I can't boot into X, or I can't boot. It is a daily occurrence multiple times.
But, what I'm saying is, look, I've been there. I've done it. I've installed, you know, X, you know, driver and couldn't start X Windows and couldn't figure it the frick out, and I just reloaded the OS.
Yeah, well, that's the simplest, quickest, and cleanest solution, rather than trying to troubleshoot or roll something back or figure out exactly where the failure is at reinstall.
So what is the saying, with great power comes great responsibility? Is that it?
Not if you're dealing with newcomers.
Well, I pretty much learned everything I did about computers by doing everything wrong several times and then figuring it out the right way. And
yeah, but Flying Rich, if you're in IRC, you can't give people that advice.
Oh, sure.
You're telling them, you know, go figure it out for yourself. That's not what an IRC help channel is for.
But the point I'm trying to make is, for a user to use an operating system, if they can hose it by a mouse click, that's not real good. But I understand that, yeah, there are things I do with an OS that nobody else has ever done, and that's why I use Linux. But for a guy that wants to use, like, OpenOffice and, you know, browse the web, and he really doesn't care about that stuff.
Well, you can certainly hose Windows with a mouse click especially if you're in email and you got a message from CryptoLocker.
Which, I got a question for you guys. I don't know if anybody can answer this, and it might be the wrong forum, so feel free to punt. I was on the meetup show with Door-to-Door Geek, and we started talking about CryptoLocker and CrashPlan. So I'm like, crap, all right, now I got the trial version of CrashPlan, all of my family's computers are backed up, my multiple computers and the different versions of the OSs they boot are all backed up right now. The question is, like, if I get CryptoLocker and everything starts getting encrypted and it starts getting backed up by CrashPlan, does CrashPlan have versioning? Because realistically, the crypto, if I get CryptoLocker on a PC, which actually my wife has the only PC, is it going to just overwrite the backup that it has, or can I go back to Tuesday's version and get it and restore that?
See, I've run into that, working for a school, there was this old, educational system that they had and had all the kids' records in it. But, I had the system set, you know, set to back up, you know, I had enough storage to back up week one, week two, you know, but not week three. So they notified me that there was a problem on week three, and of course by that time the database had overwritten itself, and oh. So I told them, no, there's no, I can't bring it back, I'm sorry, you know, Somebody should have been on top of this, and it was in the school year. It's supposed to be written out to a a separate hard copy, and I tell them I can't bring it back. You brought me back, both the backups have been overwritten. There's nothing I can do about it.
Right, and stuff like that happens. Which one of those things is, I think some people want to sit there and like, oh, wow, I went to this website, I don't want to let anybody know. And 3 days later, they think about, and they finally get up the courage to talk to the sysadmin. And the sysadmin said, yeah, we had 2 days of backup.
And we've gone quiet.
And I think a lot of this thing has gone, if Claudio and Chad were here, I'm sure they could confirm in the last few years, a lot of this stuff that has... the educational testing programs that used to run on a local server, they've all gone web-based, which makes a lot less work for me, but it makes a lot less work for me. If you catch what I'm saying, I mean, it's great I don't have to fiddle with stuff, but there's a lot less billable hours in it for me these days. Okay, I've killed the podcast. We need to, I guess I'll start talking to Rich about guns.
I'm still here. It's just, I'm still here. I just didn't have much to comment on. Nobody has anything to say on that topic.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, I'm in Palm Beach, and I'm trying to figure out if the Okeechobee outdoor range is going to be rained out right now. So I'm looking at an aviation weather forecast, and it's in Greenwich Mean Time, and I'm just doing the calculations and figuring out whether it's worth cleaning up my Mosin-Nagant gun and driving an hour plus out there to shoot the thing, along with the AK.
And if I haven't, I think I responded on G+, but thanks for your links and your guidance. I did get a hex receiver Mosin. I'm just waiting for warmer weather to cook out the Cosmoline and the wood parts.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that as it's getting up this morning, whether I was going to take some, we got a water kettle and boil up some water and put some soap in that and try and get that out of the wood with some hot soapy water. And I have mineral spirits here, so the mineral spirits work really good on cleaning off the Cosmoline. And this thing, it's like on it bad, but it looks really nice.
Yeah, I've heard on the on the webs about this Reds compound, and it's like one part mineral spirits and one part kerosene and one part transmission fluid and what's the other part? I bought it.
I wouldn't put transmission fluid in anything unless you want it to stink for the rest of your life.
Well, it's only on the metal parts. It's not on the wood parts.
Yeah, what's the idea of that? To clean it and preserve it at the same time? Or
I guess so, but I've been looking at a whole bunch of videos.
Here's what I got to say is I couldn't believe how good the mineral spirits worked. Because everybody has an opinion. First off, I wouldn't mix mineral spirits with transmission fluid. Transmission fluid is—it's just going to stink, and it's a synthetic lubricant. It's not going to cut down on things. Now, mineral spirits and Caro—they almost do the same thing. I would just go straight mineral spirits.
I thought about that. I bought like a length of 3-inch PVC to soak the barrel in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't have to soak the barrel, and all I did is plug the end of the barrel and pour some mineral spirits down it and let that set for a while, and then cleaned it up from there.
Oh, look at that, too.
Yeah, the PVC idea was good, but I was in Florida when I got the first one. I didn't have all, saws and stuff like that to cut it, and I'm like, all right, well, how am I going to do this? So I just stood it up in like a plastic basin and plugged the barrel and just poured mineral spirits down it. But the 3-inch tube, I think, would be the best way to go. I don't know how much mineral spirits you need for that. And if maybe the idea is kerosene's cheaper than mineral spirits, and if you go 50-50 on that, it'll help you out when you dunk it?
Well, definitely, I'm going to have to read that disassembly videos because I've looked some of the text on the web and it's like, I have never seen so many parts in a weapon.
You are way too funny. The disassembly, who is it? It was Jesse James. He said he always liked to build choppers that looked like it had, you know, one or two less parts than it needed to operate. And the most Nagant is exactly that. It's one of those things you kind of scratch your head. You say, how does this work? Because there's just way too little parts for it to, you know, compared to any other rifle, for it to actually be functional.
I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm looking at the terminal aerodrome forecast for an airport near Okeechobee, and it looks like it's going to be, you know, showers in the area for most of the day. So that makes
sense. It's raining here today and yesterday or whatever.
And here is where? That sounds like a New Jersey accent?
No. I'm in England.
I was goofing on you.
We don't tend to get snow here, but maybe later this month. Maybe.
Well, yeah, Seb, I've been trying to figure out what is the correct term for people with, you know, sort of a British accent, but I mean from all the colonies worldwide that Britain used to have. Do we say it's a Commonwealth accent? I don't think British is right, because British is just the I thought was, you know, just the original islands. But I mean, if you we've been talking to Marcus today, you know, from New Zealand, and of course all our friends Australia.
I think I missed some of them. Yeah, I think I'm spending the night when I decide to sleep.
I don't think there's a collective name for the accent of people from the colonies or the Commonwealth, because they're all different.
I was going to say something like that as well. I don't think there is really an accent, and Popey's from England as well, so that's good. But you got two of us.
So just to be completely offensive, I could just say y'all sound alike. Why wouldn't there be?
That garbled for me. Y'all sound like what?
Just to be completely offensive, I could say you all sound alike. Why wouldn't there be a term for that?
Well, yeah. But then, you know, there's loads of accents probably within Australia. I know there's loads of accents within the UK.
Correct, yeah.
And, you know, I find it difficult understanding a Scots person speaking English someone from Newcastle, or even a Liverpudlian Welsh person.
You find it hard to listen to Thistleweb speaking then, yeah?
I can't remember last time I heard Thistleweb, actually.
Oh, you must have missed. Yeah, you missed him.
Is
last
he
night,
quite? Is his accent quite strong?
Oh yeah. Yes. I mean, I'm used to it now. I used to listen to those Equivins and Tetbikes before that and stuff. So, but at first, I had to get used to that a bit as well.
I find Irish the Irish accent really hard if it's really thick. There was a guy I used to work with who I would refuse to take phone calls from, and I would only talk to him face to face because I just couldn't understand a word he said over the phone. And he was speaking English.
Well, when I was at Cornell Medical Center, I had a fellow working for me, and he was Chinese, and it was like a 3-second delay before I understood what he said. And I got better as time went on and as I understood his, you know, pronunciations. But yeah, it was a very large effort to understand what he was saying.
Yeah, accents is an interesting one because here's a good example, actually. There's somebody I met at an event, you know, Linux event. Anyway, he had to apparently relearn English, French, and Swedish because of some sort of accident or whatever the reason. And because I'm also half Swedish, I can speak Swedish. So with this particular person, I found it a lot easier to talk to him in Swedish than in English, because when he spoke in English, it would have all this accent and it would be all like, okay, that's a bit difficult to understand. But when I spoke to him in Swedish, it would be a lot easier, and it could be because that language is apparently easier to relearn as well. There's less words or whatever reason, but, you know, there you go. When you can switch between languages with certain people, it might actually easier to understand them in the other language, like I'm saying here.
Well, you know, that brings up another thing. In India, the common language, because they have, I think, 12 different languages, is English. But I get recruiting calls from India all the time, and they sound like they understand me, and I understand them well, but when I tell them, like, yes, I'm not interested, they keep talking. Like I said, I was interested. So there's something, there's a miss there.
No, that's just sales.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's just a script. Keep, you know, till you hang up the phone, they're going to try to keep you on there.
Because I can be rude. Is that what I need to do?
Hang up, yeah.
Because I've noticed listening like podcasts, and at first like Tux Radar, that took me a while, and there's the European version of the PC Gamer magazine that was even worse. That I had to be in a kind of a quiet room to understand those guys, but sometimes so. Well, we've mentioned on the list, you know, you guys with the British, and that's a, you know, huge encompassing thing. We've established there's no good word to put on that, but you need to speak to us Americans slowly for us to understand you.
That you said that all the British sound alike. I think actually a lot of the Americans sound alike in our case, but I noticed actually as somebody from England. What I personally noticed is something I've noticed on TV a lot of the time. They have this kind of, it kind of fits in with the stereotype, I think, of these, some of these BBC shows and so on. It's like London accent and the tea and all that, you know, and they all kind of, a lot of them sound very similar on these TV shows. Not everyone, not all TV shows, but on the TV, a lot of these shows, not talking about documentaries, I mean actual shows about whatever, they seem to all have the same kind of accent. I don't know if Popey's noticed this as well or not, but I seem to have noticed this.
What, on British shows or American shows?
Yeah, but no, British shows. It's kind of, you get the kind of London accent, don't you, going into a lot of the shows. I don't know if you know what I mean.
No, I don't watch a lot of telly, so...
They sound a bit posh and fitting with the stereotype and stuff. But, you know, it depends on the show as well, but...
And that's the other thing, comedy... We've talked about this before, and I guess it's cultural what bring, you know, comes across. Fawlty Towers, you know, Americans will just fall down laughing. Are you being served? You know, we'll fall down laughing at that. But there's a lot of British shows that are comedies that are played over here, and it's like, we don't understand.
Yeah, but there's a difference between British humour and American humour, and, you know, even Irish humour and so on. There's, you know, you have like a difference of culture and the country, and some stuff kind of, I think, I don't really watch much comedy myself, but obviously some jokes kind of probably sort of work through the whole, you could say, the whole Western world, America, Canada, Europe, and other jokes will be different depending on country, I guess.
So does it work the other way? I'm sure probably that, you know, the BBC has tried to run American shows with dramedy and humor. Do you guys look at that and say, we just don't get it?
When they do show American comedians, I think people do probably get it. But come to think of it, I think, come to think of it, comedy on TV here, it probably is mainly the British comedians or possibly an Irish comedian. There's not really that many American comedians on, I don't think, but I don't really watch much comedy anyway, but I think we do get the American jokes when they come on in general.
I think we do, unless the jokes are relating to American celebrities or, you know, presidents or, you know, stuff that isn't culturally relevant or something. You have to get quite deep into that before it makes sense.
Yeah, so we make a joke about Miley Cyrus and this goes right over your head.
Well, that kind of stuff is like, that's like really made its way everywhere, I think. But yeah, I don't know, there's There's certain like popular brand names as well. So, for example, there's a game called Cards Against Humanity, and the American version, which came out first, there's now a UK version. The American version on the cards in the game has lots of American branded products and American celebrity names and things of historical reference that, you know, Brits don't get. So when we play, we often pull out all the American cards and just have all the generic cards in there, because a lot of people are like, who is that person, or what is that product, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Wow. I played that game and hadn't even thought about that. So yeah, we need to do the international version sometime.
I've mostly played it with Americans when I'm at a conference, and we all sit down after a few beers, and I go and get the cards out, and we play it. And it doesn't usually matter too much, because once you've played through a couple of times, all the Americans explain what those cards mean, and so, you know, it's less of a problem. I've picked it all up now, but, you know, initially it was a problem. Fun game, though.
So are the American cards labeled like, hey, you're not going to get this?
No, you buy a set, and the set is either the US edition or the UK edition, and the US edition just has a few cards sprawled through it that make cultural references to American things, like, you know, like mac and cheese. We just don't get that over here.
Mm-hmm. So if they said Vegemite, you'd understand it?
Yeah, we would. But, yeah, that would be translated to Marmite in the UK version.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. I remember when I was in, oh my gosh, how many years ago was this? It was before 1980. I was over in Germany, and they had like mayonnaise in a squeeze tube, but it didn't go over in the U.S. But now we have the squeeze jar, you know, and it's funny how some products will go over in one country and won't go over in another country.
Oh yeah, the squeeze product. Sure, Sweden have a lot of this as well, where you like squeeze out your mayonnaise or whatever it is, and yeah.
But so I have a problem with them. I just told my wife, don't ever buy the squeezy mustard ever again, because we have English mustard over here a lot, and it normally comes in a glass jar. It's a very particular shaped glass jar, and we always get that, and there's always a little bit of residue left in the bottom or underneath the lip of the glass jar where the lid goes. But with the squeezy one, because the mustard is so thick, it never drops down to the bottom, so you can never squeeze the last bit out.
Yeah, you need a centrifuge.
Yeah, so I've said, well, like, that's banned. We're not allowed to have that product as a squeezy product anymore.
Well, I think that's all packaging everywhere. You can't get the last little bit out.
True, but it is easier to stick a knife in a glass jar and rummage around than, you know, get it all out of the plastic bit.
Well, that's an interesting marketing point. I've always been curious about that, as to whether you buy 12 ounces of product X, and if 2 ounces stay in it, are they calculating that you're going to need more sooner, and then that 2 ounces go to landfill?
Yeah, I often wonder if they, you know, deliberately use containers that make it hard to get the last bit out, and then they'll be, in 3 years' time, bring out a new version, a classic version, which is really, you know, sells the point that it's really easy to get the last bit out.
No, I am absolutely certain they create containers that it's impossible to get the last bit out. The only way I combat that is do a lot of recipes to call for wine, and, you know, I when I get to that point, use the wine to shake out the container. Now, I'll say, I would think, looking back through the chat, this has been the, least food oriented, 24-hour show ever.
I tried to get a food discussion started last night, but no one would take it. It was like, oh, well, we kind of got one now. But yeah, the food topics were great, great last time, really.
Oh, damn, I missed out on that. But I wasn't on the gun chat.
We can do a food topic right now if we want to, but it's not quite like last time, is it?
Well, I'm going to go for round 4 of filet mignon. I've successfully cooked filet mignon 3 times prior to that this year.
What's that?
I found on YouTube a recipe for filet mignon with a red wine reduction, so I'm going to make filet mignon for the family tonight.
I don't even know what that is. So what's that? What is it?
Oh, yeah, what's that?
It's like the best part of the cow. It's the, you might call it the filet of tenderloin.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't eat that.
So it's, like, if, you know what a T-bone steak is?
Yeah.
All right, so it's basically one side of the T-bone steak.
The small side.
Right, right.
Which is not hard to do anymore because with the, hysteria, about Mad Cow, they will not let you actually cut a T-bone steak anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's really interesting stuff. I got a buddy in Iowa that does food inspection, and he told me about the processing of the meat and why that's an issue, and it's because of, like you said, how they cut it up.
Yeah, it's any animal big enough to be cut up for... For me, it's like, oh, well, you know, anybody over anything over 20 months, we got to assume it might have something in there, so they won't let you have T-bone steaks. They got, you know, anything that's got the vertebrae still in there, so they got to cut it up separately.
Right, right, and apparently that's the issue because the mad cow lives in the brain and in the spinal column, and if you're slicing that up and getting that around in the meat, then you got a problem.
Brains.
and see, I always enjoy the marrow out of that section of beef, but I guess it'll be compensated for. I haven't posted this on G plus, but there are various things we always threw into the offal when we had a critter butchered, and we're splitting it with friends this time. But they kind of beat me to it because I incredibly love chicken hearts, and she said, "No, we want the heart out of the critter, so we'll split it out to her." But I don't know why around Christmas you see the tripe in these stores, which is animal stomach. And with beef, you actually have four different types because beef has four different stomachs. But I've got a picture of it I was going to put up on G Plus, but I had never cooked tripe before. And so I grabbed some honeycomb tripe 3-4 weeks ago, and it came out really good. But it's like, it's like a lot of stuff. It involves itself with the sauce and all that. I mean, if you had anything with the sauce that I made, it would come out tasting pretty good. So. But, I made tripe the other day, and it came out pretty tasty.
So where are you located?
Kansas.
Okay, like Casey Moe or KCK? What are we talking about?
South Central. If you, tell you what, if you put a pin in the map between Dodge City and Wichita, and if you bisect that, you'd be right at my house.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry. Wichita and Dodge City. What am I thinking?
Let's see. I've flown into Wichita, and I forget what airport in Kansas City I've flown into.
Yeah, we had some excitement the other day. Somebody flew in the 787 cargo model, and they landed in. They didn't land it at Mid Kansas. They landed at Jabara, because they didn't know where the frick they were.
Well, I got to tell you, I actually haven't landed at the wrong airport, but I've lined up for a landing at the wrong airport. And then last minute, the tower says, hey, by the way. And I think it really depends on the type of equipment in the plane, so you really understand where you are. And that's an issue when, say, two airports have identical runways, and you can manage to do that. But like I have that problem with my Garmin GPS in my car, is because it's scaling all the time. I have no idea whether the turn is in a quarter mile or in 500 feet. And I would actually have to read where it says the turn is. But what I thought was clever is Google on the Android is now doing the maps, and they're doing the satellite view on it. So based on the size of things, you know, trees and houses and buildings and the road, because it's an actual picture that you're driving on, you really understand the scale of it. Now, I just got a new car, and it has a GPS in it, and when it comes near a turn, it does a split screen, and then it shows a vertical bar chart, or a vertical bar, kind of like a progress bar, I should say, about how close you are to the turn, and it's incremented in feet, so you know how far away that turn is going to be and precisely where it is in very good detail.
Well, I have thought in the last few months there are some states that specifically come up with laws against Google Glass, and it's like, are you nuts? It's a lot less distracting if you have a HUD display rather than looking down at your dashboard to see where you need to go.
Google Glass, have you actually got Google Glass over there now?
Oh, yeah, a couple of my buddies have it.
There's a little light. I don't know, there's privacy concerns to some extent, isn't there? As well,
so wait a second. Wait. I'm sorry. Where are you right now?
England.
No, England. And there's privacy concerns over citizens being able to record or photograph things where you have a complete surveillance state with video cameras everywhere.
Not everywhere.
Okay, not in the bathrooms.
There's none in anywhere I can see from where I'm sat. And I'm not in the bathrooms.
What we're saying is it's good for the government to record you every moment of the day, but if a citizen does that, that's wrong.
I think it's more that it's the government don't record audio of everything, and they don't record video of everything.
That's the most insane thing. I am sorry. That is the most insane thing I've ever heard. You're saying because there's no audio.
I didn't finish what I was saying.
Well, that's my trademark, is jumping in on you, so...
Okay, I'm going to go make lunch.
Uh-oh, did I really do that?
Yeah, I don't know, he's left. He was going to make lunch anyway, I think.
Well, I'm sorry, it sounded like he was coming to a good point.
He might be back, he might not. He's probably just making lunch. Maybe he got disconnected or something. You know, computers go wrong at times too, don't they? Or the internet. Or power cut, maybe.
Well, I don't know, considering how rapidly I've gone through some money recently, I'm surprised that I've turned down a buddy. Like right now in the U.S., I think there was an initial group that was invited to have the ability to purchase Google Glass, and then you had so many, once you bought them, you were given invites to give to a number of friends, kind of like how Gmail started or a couple of the Google products started, you would have to get an invite from a friend to join it. And it's $1,700, but I'm not going for that.
Yeah, this Google Glass thing, I don't know much about it, but it's kind of like, you know, you look at, so if I understand correctly anyway, you can look at somebody out on the street or whatever, and it will basically send everything you see and hear off to Google. Is that correct?
You know, I hate to say it, I really don't know for sure. I wish there probably is a YouTube video showing what the feed looks like. But no, I haven't looked it up, and I asked a buddy of mine, like, hey, so what's the killer app? How does that work? And he just tells me he loves it. But, I mean, that's the same thing guys did with a Palm Pilot 10 years ago.
Anyway, they'll be like the Matrix, and then we'll have Google Glass agents or something like that, you know, I guess, or I don't know, really.
And I don't recall the source of the story, but I don't know if I was watching TV or listening to the radio, but some guy announced that his son is getting married and his fiancée is going to allow him to wear Google Glass during the ceremony. I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, but I think there's but then you get, yeah, but then you'll have like Google Glass, well, at least here, I mean, America's a bit different, but here there can be all these kind of like privacy concerns about, for example, schools and having Google Glass being used to record whatever there and all that kind of stuff, you know.
So Google Glass, I think, has a kind of enhanced issue when you're as opposed to no, that's not true. They have the same issue. So in England, all of the cameras do facial recognition and they run through a database. And so the potential is Google Glass can do the same thing. So I don't know if you're a predator at a school and you see a child that you're interested in, whether you're going to be able to locate their home or follow them home or something, if it's going to enhance that, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the kind of thing people worry about as well when it comes to these things. All the anything to do with privacy and so on. But other than that, it's could be kind of an interesting idea, I guess. But it does seem like things are going a bit far in a way. Like now you're gonna, you know, wearing normal glasses, okay, fine. You know, getting around a mobile phone, that's pretty standard, you know. But when we're talking about technology that people are going to actually start wearing or possibly, you know, one day have embedded in them, you know, things get a bit, well, it depends what you're talking about, what technology you're talking about, but things can get a bit, it's kind of like, is technology going too far in a way, if you know what I mean?
But it's always going too far.
Hey, before we get too far, did we, I was out of the room getting a beer, did we give our greetings to the final time zone?
No, that will happen 2 hours, an hour ago, I think. Yeah, we're in the, like, after show now, so we've done, that was an hour ago, the final place.
What was that, Hawaii?
I've got regions of the USC, Baker Island, Howland Island.
I think that was an hour ago because it's 12 hours behind the UK, isn't it? 12 hours behind UCC, so that's an hour ago because it's 1 o'clock now, or just gone past in the afternoon.
Well, we might have missed it, but if we missed it, sorry, you've been waiting around an hour for us to get around so you can do your kissing and, you know, whatever you need to do at the midnight hour.
Wait, so you're drinking beer at 7 a.m.?
I guess I am.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't. When was the last time I had a drink? I don't know. First off, I'm jealous, and I've certainly done that in my past. So it's not that I'm, you know, condemning you. It's just that.
Well, I imagine this will be the last one. But yeah, I woke back up in at 4 a.m. plus something and heard voices. So got back on. But
and you thought,
yeah,
drinking would cure that?
It's hard to justify continuing drinking beer at 8 and 9.
Oh, that's when you switch to whiskey?
Yeah.
The beer is a breakfast food, and whiskey is more post-breakfast.
Hey, it's still dark outside. I could drink beer if I want.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that logic. I was 18 once also.
Dude, I think I'm older than you, or at least as old.
I'm 48.
I'll be 50 next year.
I'm the youngest.
Oh, gosh. So we went to see American Hustle in a movie theater in Palm Beach Gardens, and I think my wife and I were the youngest people in the theater.
Yeah, I heard that is not as good as the hype.
Are you kidding me? It was really good.
Okay, I'll wait for it to hit video. I tell you what, while I was absent, you know, my buddy here, he actually lives on the second house on this property, and about the one time I get to go over is New Year's to watch videos. We used to do it all the time, but, you know, apparently he's busy, but, I drug over a bunch of my videos, and we picked out Blair Witch, which neither of us had seen, so we watched that tonight.
Really? You haven't seen that? When did you watch that the other night?
Just tonight. That's why I didn't come back. I told people 4 o'clock my time. Well, I'm going to do my chores, and then I came back in. It was, well, better clean up, get my dad, you know, get there for my dad and all that stuff. And then by the time I got that done, it was time to go over and watch videos with my buddy. And then apparently I came in later tonight. And then fell asleep and then came in now. So
Well, I obviously don't really know you. That sounds a bit surprising to me that you haven't seen that film, because, I mean, it's been around for quite a few years now, at least.
I got to admit, I have never seen the film.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I wait for it to hit the 5-minute mark.
What happened there?
Yeah, you dropped out on that.
Oh, he did, yeah.
I said a lot of the movies I wait for it to hit the $5 bin at Walmart.
Uh-huh. I'm cheaper than you. I wait for it to hit Redbox.
Yeah, see, but I can't get back the next day. I'm not in town.
Uh-huh. What's Redbox?
Oh, shoot. Yeah, okay. So in the U.S., there's these DVD vending machines, and they're the size of a refrigerator, and they place them indoors, outdoors. So a lot of Walmarts or even like a McDonald's will have them. And so you can just go and get a movie. There's a web app and an app for your phone, and you can see what movies are available. The cool thing is, like, you could rent a movie in New York, fly to Florida, and return it to the local red box there. It doesn't have to go back to the same one you rented from.
What do you mean, like, a bit like a vending machine, except you, well, yeah, a bit like a vending machine, or you spent it and say you want to see that film and then you get it? Or
yeah, it's just like a vending machine, and it uses a credit card, and you just swipe your credit card, you choose what email, and they also have games in it also, but I'm assuming they're like DVD type games.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So, very convenient, and yeah, if you want to rent something that you think is going to be a real stinker, you're out a buck or $1.25, so it's not that bad.
That's only the old movies, I assume, like...
They're not too bad, I think it's not too far behind Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix. Now that's an interesting one as well as Linux users, because, of course, it doesn't. You know, there's no Netflix for Linux. Okay, there's for Android, but that's, you know, a bit different. But for desktop Linux, there is no Netflix, and you know, you probably watch it on some sort of other device anyway or something. But what do you think about the whole Netflix not having Linux support? Obviously, it's because of digital rights management as well. I believe there's no... I think they use Microsoft Digital Rights Management, which, of course, could technically be ported over to Linux as well, but it's going to do that, you know.
Well, they use Silverlight and...
In Silverlight. That was the other thing as well, yeah. Well, there's Moonlight, but that's... I don't know what's happened with Moonlight quite right.
Yeah, so I use Netflix all the time, but it's funny, on our phones, on our Blu-ray players, and on our computers, and I thought there was a way to watch it on Linux.
There is, but you know, you've got to use like a patched Wine or whatever it was, and then you've got to put the Windows version of Firefox in there, and you've got to put the Windows version of Silverlight in there as well, you know, so there's a way, but it's a bit of a hacky way, isn't it?
Oh, I thought there was
a new way. There's a new way. Go back to KPL a couple of weeks. We talked about it. The old way, you had to have Wine, and you had an old version of Firefox under Windows version of Firefox.
Yeah, that's what
under
I was
Wine.
Saying. That's what I just said.
And in full, but there's a new project out there that has the API so that you can run the current version of Linux under Firefox or whatever browser, but it will fool Silverlight into thinking you're running an old Windows browser. So, at least a little better security, a little better on resources than before.
So I don't know if this is an appropriate topic, but sometimes I'll rent from Redbox, and if I'm traveling, I have a MacBook Pro and it doesn't have a disk drive, so I'd want to rip the movie so I can watch it on the plane. And lately, Handbrake hasn't been working on movies. Is there a way around that?
You're probably not meant to do that, so or ever, you know, so because of the whole digital rights management and all the rest of it, you know, but...
Oh, I understand you're not supposed to do that.
I don't use a Mac anyway, so I can't really comment anyway.
It's really a Handbrake question, and Handbrake is pretty cross-platform.
No, taking this low, Ken Fallon, bitched like a little girl all last year. We didn't invite him to Oddcast Planet Live, even though afterwards he said he never would have made it to it. So we're starting to do the second version, and I talked about that earlier. So we're looking at Knoebels in Pennsylvania, but it was just an IRC saying he wasn't. Ken is definitely invited if he can get his Irish ass over the fuck over here. I think we could probably pool our resources to get him into the right damn place. So, Ken, quit your bitching that you weren't invited over here. So, we'll do that. And, I guess 3:30 is going to be in China. Fuck. How the hell are you going to China? 3:30. Come on here and explain China to us.
How much have you had to drink? 5150.
I still got some beer left.
Did you have any champagne this year? Or strictly beer?
Just beer. My standard 211.
Hey, you were playing to IRC chat. I've just seen that.
And which I just finished. I have to go get another now. But I'm going to try to goad 3:30 to joining us. He hasn't been on today, has he?
I don't think so, no. He might have been while I wasn't here, but I don't know.
Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year.
So what's the topic of discussion right now? I'm just watching snowflakes fall down in my region.
No snow here. It's just a rainy day. Very cloudy and, yeah.
So you're on the other side of the pond, I suppose?
Yeah.
So where are you located that it's snowing?
Man, I'm in the wilderness called Southeast Michigan.
Uh-huh.
I'm in England.
And I'm in Palm Beach, Florida.
Oh, damn. You should have kept your mouth closed on that one. You know, my wife and I went to Palm Beach. I loved it out there, man. You know, the housing market had crashed over there, so there was some very wonderful palaces that were quite affordable. But I think we stayed at the Four Seasons, and it's a very nice spot near the boardwalk. Awesome. Oh,
yeah. I don't know if I stayed there a night or two for my five-year anniversary. And the Four Seasons is quite nice.
I'm trying to get back there because they had this breakfast spot on the boardwalk that I couldn't remember what it was called. But my wife had got some type of fried shellfish and stuff in a big platter. It was so funny. She got this huge platter, knew that she wasn't going to eat it all. They brought it out, sat in front of her, and she was so embarrassed.
Oh, that's funny. Now, you don't sound like you got a Michigan accent.
Nah, but I'll give you a couple guesses, though.
Sounds like Louisiana to me.
Did you say Louisiana?
Yes, sir.
Negative. One more shot.
Okay, here he is then. Like, 5150 wanted.
Well,
I think so. Oh, in the channel anyway.
Go ahead, give one more shot. One more shot, Rich.
Georgia?
Negative. I'll give you one more.
Oh, man. See, I'm just stuck on Louisiana. I can't. I don't know, Mississippi?
Negative. You know what? I'll give you a hint. You actually spent a little time in that region. I think you might be there now.
Well, I'm in Florida.
Oops, I'm sorry. But at one point, you were in that part of the country.
Well, let's see. I've been in Florida, Louisiana, Rochester, Minnesota, and that is not a Minnesota accent. Maine and Long Island.
Okay. I'll go ahead and tell you. I'm from Brooklyn, BK.
No way.
Oh, absolutely. Born and raised.
I would have never guessed that.
I know. I've lived just about everywhere from the Midwest to the East Coast, down south. I've lived down there for a little bit, but born and raised in New York.
Oh, really? So do you know where Brooklyn College is?
Well, absolutely. Brooklyn College is down on not too far from, there was a school called, is it not Midway? Well, Let me see. Let me see if I know the avenue. It's not. It's past Flatbush. Way past Flatbush. I think it's on the east. The east in the '80s or something like that. East 90s. I forgot what exact region that is over there. But yeah, I'm familiar with Brooklyn College. I can't remember the address at the moment.
Well, anyhow, at the football field on the light post, they have a nest of Quaker parakeets. Have you ever seen them?
Nah, I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, because I have a pet Quaker, so every once in a while I'll go by there and check it out.
That sounds cool. I think the high school I'm thinking of is called Midwood. Yeah, that was the high school that was over there. They used to play football at Brooklyn College because they didn't have their own football field in high school. I went to Brooklyn Tech. That's how I went to high school, which is off of Flatbush Avenue, DeKalb, mm-hmm. DeKalb over there near the world-famous cheesecake spot over there, right off of Flatbush Avenue.
Cool. I'm driving back to New York either late Friday or early Saturday morning. I got to get a project done by Tuesday for a company that I work only on site for.
Did you say you're driving up from Florida? Wow, that's about 18 hours, man.
Yeah, I kind of did a dumb thing. I did an impulse buy and I bought a car while I was down here.
Hopefully you got one of those economy-conscious vehicles.
Why would I do that?
Because you got an 18-hour drive.
Nah, that wasn't the purpose of the car.
Okay, I'm curious. What is it? What did you purchase?
I got the 3.8-liter Hyundai Genesis Coupe.
Oh, nice, nice.
It's a frickin' rocket.
You better than that is the warranty. Was it 150,000 miles, 10-year warranty, something like that?
Yeah, 100,000 miles, 10 years, and some things taper off after a couple of years, but, powertrain body is 10 years, 100,000 miles, so I did get the extended warranty. But first or second night I had the car, I'm coming back from dinner with my wife, I've got an AK in the back with a back seat folded down and a Mosin Nagant there, and I'm carrying an LC9, I get pulled over for speeding.
Ouch.
And so the cop asks for where the registration is, I say, oh, it's under the folded down back seat. He's like, you have guns back there? I'm like, yes, I do.
Well, did you tell him that?
Now, you see, you would love to have my local sheriff, because he was on hand for the gun show where I bought my Smith & Wesson 45, and I asked him, I'm going to pick up some bullets on the way home. Do I need to do anything to set it up on top of the seat? What's the deal? And he was like, no, it's not freaking business. If you have a gun in the car or not, you can have it under the seat in, wherever you want it. I don't even want to freaking know.
Wow. Wow. See, in Louisiana, apparently, I think the law is you have to have it on your dashboard or your center console, that it has to be visible.
Well, that's what I thought. It either had to be laying out on the seat or locked in a, in the glove box. Yeah, the glove box had to be locked, put in there. It's like, he was like, no, it's not my fucking business if you've got a gun. I don't want to know if you got a gun.
That's pretty, I haven't thought it all the way through, but that's pretty pro-Second Amendment. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Yeah, the cop asked me to step out of the car, and I was like, oh, gosh. I was waiting for the SWAT team to come, or I was waiting for him to, say, okay, bend over. And I'm like, oh. And I happen to have some friends that are cops. And basically, if you get pulled over, you turn off the car, you roll down the windows. If it's at night, you turn on the light in the passenger compartment and put your hands on top of the steering wheel so the cop can see them. So he's like, you've law enforcement, you this, you that. I'm like, no. And I've got a Coast Guard auxiliary ID, and he saw that. He's like, you Coast Guard? I'm like, yeah, auxiliary. And he's like, how long are you doing that? I'm like, 10 years. And he's like, all right, I'm going to give you a break. And I was like, thank God. I told him it was...
I've kind of got an end. The undersheriff's wife is the woman who comes out to help me, once a week with my dad on the home health stuff. And so I know the guy, and well, I do hope that when the sheriff retires, he wins the job, because if he doesn't and has to go someplace else, I'm kind of screwed as far as finding somebody. That... pretty close.
That's some serious small town crazy stuff.
No, but that could be anywhere. It doesn't matter. You could know the sheriff's wife and no big deal.
Help, but...
And hey, people don't even tend to have guns.
Well, nobody could send in where Dad was, and it's like, would you like to have them? And they said, oh, yeah, great. So, shipped them off to them this last week. So, not to expect any kind of special treatment or anything like that, but it is good to have a relationship with the local law enforcement.
Yeah, except for if you have the relationship I do with them.
So 3:30, what's that mean?
Not much. Just woke up to the sound of you guys jabbering on.
Ooh, thanks. Hey, so do you miss Peggy or what?
I wouldn't say I do miss him, but my aim is improving.
So what's this about? You're going to China?
It's a trip that my kung fu teacher's teacher is putting together. He did it about 10 years ago. And he takes us all over to China, and we get a pretty unique experience.
That's pretty cool. I don't know if you guys know, but my daughter's from China. My wife adopted her before we got married.
No, I had no idea.
So we're always talking about going back.
Yeah, it's when people usually go to China, to go to some of the places that we'll be going, they tend to give you a government-sponsored guide, but the old Triad Society, not the gangs, but the old Triad Society, is still together in China, and so my Sigong is his title. He's actually in with that group, so it's almost like a mob thing where we get to go places where most people can't go.
That sounds really cool. So you got to take pictures and post them. Tell us what you've been up to.
Oh, yeah. It'll definitely get posted. I don't know if I'll be using the internet at all in China, for obvious reasons, but,
No Google Glass?
No, but I was thinking about buying a Chromebook and using it while I was there, and then, on my way to the airport, just, pitching it into a river or something.
I saw a refurb Chromebooks, 14-inchers for, like, $229, pretty low price.
Yeah, I wasn't going to spend any more than, like, $250 on them. You can get the little Samsung one for that.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about 10-inch would be fine for anybody I know, but I wanted to get my dad a 14-inch, at least.
Yeah, because I'm not about to bring my computer to China. That would not be fun times at all.
I never thought about that, because, I got a computer backpack, or a backpack that... for a computer and SLR, and typically if I'm flying, that's what I my carry-on bag.
Yeah, I actually carry on everything, so I just bring like a camping backpack. I bought one that fits. I went through all the airlines and found the least space you can take up, and bought a camping backpack that fits in that. So oh, cool. I don't check anything.
Yeah. My goal used to be not to check anything, but with Southwest, you get two bags free, and if I'm spending, more than a week in Florida, I usually bring a bigger bag with me.
Yeah, I checked one bag, and it was on a Greyhound bus, and they lost it, and it had my, the bag was the bag that I used to carry my sparring gear in, mm-hmm. and it had my belt, my manual, and another book in it, and Greyhound lost it and never reimbursed me or anything. So my white belt is gone forever.
How the frick do they lose that? That's ridiculous. It's not like you're changing buses, right?
No, I was changing buses. I was in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my fault, but things weren't described to me very well.
Nah.
I still had the tag on my bag from when I went down. I thought that the tag was kind of round trip, Mm-hmm. And no one told me to put a tag on it, because as I walk in, there's a tag, and they go, oh, okay, yeah. And just, so I called, you know, every station that I knew was in between, and everyone claimed they didn't find it. So, yeah, so I don't check bags anymore. I don't own enough things that I need to do that.
Well, I've had bags not make the flight, but I've always gotten them.
Well, you lost something. Are you talking about luggage, plain luggage, extra luggage?
Yeah, I carry no extra luggage, only the stuff I can take on the plane.
Yeah, but I mean, you just don't put anything valuable in there, like a few clothes, and you know, and then if you do lose it, it's no big deal, surely. I mean, I was thinking you could put some of your clothes in your hand baggage, so if you do get completely stuck, you at least got some clothes, even if you lose your big bag, you know what I mean?
Well, at the time that I was doing this traveling, I was traveling on Red Hat's dime, so I was broke. So losing even, like, a handful of t-shirts was, like, a huge deal, because that was five days I couldn't wear a shirt. Yeah, this is when I was a broke college student. Yeah, so I don't... I still treat the world like I'm broke and everything is going to kill me. Although when I start carrying, I guess I'll have to start checking luggage because, can't take a gun on a plane.
You are correct, sir. And make sure your plane isn't diverted to New Jersey and you take possession of your luggage there.
I hope that nothing ever goes to New Jersey. New Jersey is the asshole of the universe.
Anyhow, I was going to go on about some dumb things about checking firearms at airports, but I'll pass because it might get me in trouble.
Did you have some not go so well or go fantastically well?
Okay. So here, I've never had an issue, but my Mini 14 has a folding telescoping stock, a flash suppressor, a pistol grip, and several 30-round magazines. It's never been legal in New York, but for a while, prior to 2013, I'd bring it with me all the time whenever I went back and forth to Florida for two reasons. One, it's like, hey, Southwest, you get two bags free. And two, I got my carry permit in Minnesota, and Minnesota allows carry as opposed to concealed carry. So you can carry any way you like. So my firearms instructor, whenever he could, he would open carry so people would get used to seeing people with guns. And that was kind of my other thought about checking a rifle and going, on the airplane with that. Well, like I said, later I learned that my rifle was never legal in New York because of all these scary black plastic pieces that, articulate and other things. But each time you check a rifle or a firearm in New York, a cop inspects it. So it's not like it's a baggage clerk looking at it and saying it's right or wrong. And so the dumb thing is, if you're in a state like Florida, you can gate check, or not gate check, but you can check your firearm and send it to a state that potentially it's not legal in, because they don't know what's in the case when you get there.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, if you're really not cognizant of the laws, like, and I don't believe this was the individual's fault, like, he's in New Jersey, and I don't know if he had a flight from, Florida to Maine, and the plane ended up making a landing, an unplanned landing in New Jersey, and he took possession of his bags, and in one of his bags was a firearm, and boom, got arrested. It's like, what's the procedure for that? What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, that's crappy.
So you could totally get hosed. Now, there was one time when I flew back to New York, and I had my rifle case, and there's four padlocks on it, and I'm standing at the curb waiting for my friend to pick me up, and there's about six cops standing behind me. It's like, do you really think that I'm going to take a rifle, fly with it, exit the airport and stand on the curb and then do some sort of gun violence? It's like, I had ample opportunity in the past few hours to do something like that. Now I'm out on the curb. Well, why would I do anything there?
Not that it's right, but at least you got that treatment for something that's a little outside the ordinary. I almost got thrown off of a flight for doing nothing but going to the bathroom.
Oh, you didn't ask permission? You didn't say, Mommy, may I?
Well, I brought my laptop, which, you know, I'm sure for people on this call is not an unnormal thing. You're working on something. You've got to go. You bring your work with you. But the air marshal did not find that funny and actually broke her cover to call down to something or other, I don't know, and was beating on the door until I came out. It was... Yeah, she was pissed, and I was pretty sure I was going to end up with a sack over my head.
Oh, boy.
Nothing ended up coming of it, but I haven't flown since then either, so I may get the special pat-down next time.
Oh, man. You know, I never thought about that. Like, once you get flagged, you might be in deep trouble. So she got your ID, etc.?
Well, I mean, they know who I am. I bought a ticket, and I'm sitting in a seat.
Right, right.
Yeah, that should be fun.
Well, it's kind of like, I know people that carry, and they don't want to discuss it, and pretty much, I'm so out there already, if whatever authorities that care about that don't know, they're, you know, whatever I do now isn't going to tip them off.
Yeah, I just recently got my conceal and carry permit in Indiana, which is disgustingly easy and is a little concerning. But you know, people are like, "Oh man, I wouldn't tell anybody." I'm like, "Really? I'm the guy who sits on every social network possible, screaming that the government is a false authority, that people should, you know, be able to govern themselves, and that all cops are pigs."
I used to have the, and I don't know if this is just a Long Island term, they talk about gangplanking, and there's a population push out to the east end of Long Island. So anytime a new resident moves out, they think that at that point, they don't want anybody else to move out because it's going to spoil it. So they want to pull up the gangplank. And I had that mentality when I first got my carry permit. And then I realized, you know what? I want everybody to carry because then it's what we call mutually assured destruction. It worked with nuclear weapons.
Well, let's not have everyone. Let's not have everyone. Because remember, there are people like Pegwell in the world that own guns. He can't see shit. He doesn't need to be firing anything at anyone.
Oh, I think you're an anti-dentite.
I'm anti-Pegwell being able to do things. I mean, he's definitely the kind of guy that would shoot the piano player because he couldn't hear the guy he was trying to shoot. But yeah, in Indiana, it is disgustingly easy to get a conceal and carry. You fill out a form online, you get your fingerprints, you pay them a bunch of money, and that's it. No classes, no instruction on how to use nothing.
Well, don't get me wrong, as far as the Second Amendment, it says you have a right, which doesn't mean you have to take a test, doesn't mean you have to pay, doesn't mean you have to have knowledge or skill. It's just like your right to the freedom of speech. You haven't had to register your mouth.
No, but I see that. Specifically for me, I see that coming.
Oh, man.
I'm not sure they'll make anyone else do it, but they'll definitely probably for me.
Well, you know what? Maybe in the blogosphere or so, they're going to be looking for press credentials or so. You can't post things online unless you're credentialed.
There was a proposed law that started in California after that blogger wouldn't reveal his source on some riot that happened in San Francisco, and I only use the term riot because I don't want to have to explain how a peaceful protest is then radically changed by the presence of the police. But he had photographs of people destroying cop cars, and the authorities obviously wanted to know where he had gotten these pictures and who are these people. And he said, "It's a confidential source." And they tried to tell him he wasn't a journalist, and they threw him in the clink for like 3 years while they tried to figure out what the hell to do with him.
3 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so around that time, they started saying, well, maybe we should more clearly define what a journalist is. And So everybody said, well, the easiest way to do it is if you're making money from it, you're a journalist. And at that time, I had a Blogspot account, or a Blogger account. And that day, I turned on ads.
Right.
And I was like, yay, journalist. Correct. Yes. So, I mean, you know. Yeah, I'll pitch some product that I don't think anyone should ever buy for any reason to keep from, you know, going to federal pound me in the ass prison.
But, no, when you talk about things like that, I mean, I don't know how many non-payments I'm away from losing my house, my car, and everything. You put me away for 3 years, certainly I'm losing everything I own.
Oh, well, yeah, along with the things you lose whilst in prison.
And so when the Fed claims or the government claims that that's their right to detain you for whatever reason, yeah, the punishment that you receive in concert with that is ridiculous. Which makes me kind of crazy about when they say, oh, you can't deport them, they have kids. It's like, if I cheat on my taxes, you're going to put me to jail and you don't care about my kid.
Yeah, I mean, kidnapping is kidnapping, no matter who does it. You know, just because they've got, you know, goofy uniforms and 10 things on their chest, yeah, that doesn't make it okay. Which puts me on probably the other side of the deportation thing than you. I'm like, who are you to deport them? You're a guy, and they're a guy or lady or, you know, whatever. So you really don't have a right to tell them to do anything at all.
Well, I mean, are you an anarchist? Where are you coming from on this?
I'm a libertarian socialist.
See, it's libertarian...
I'm a libertarian socialist.
Okay, and I wasn't calling you a libertarian. I'm saying the
okay, just making
movement.
Sure.
Yeah,
because American libertarians don't actually understand what the word means.
Okay, and libertarian is to many people whatever they think it means, and I have a lot of views that are more libertarian, but more conservative libertarian.
I'm as far right as you can, or as far left as you can get, while still not having a government.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm like, I see no borders, I see a bunch of fences that, you know, racists put up. Which makes it really interesting for for me in the whole gun debate, because I understand where people are like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't carry this here. And I go, you have a point, maybe someone shouldn't carry it there. But you have no right to tell them not to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a bunch of interesting points. Do you believe in property and property rights?
I do not believe in property. In an abstract way. I understand its function in the current society, but it's been pushed to a really weird place that I can't really stand with.
Well, then you're completely consistent with what you said about borders, and if you're not in favor of, you know, property rights, then that's completely consistent. Where I believe in property and property rights and borders.
Hey, this whole conversation is why I'm afraid to take a gun into another state, or to, you know, fly, or leaving the country will be really interesting. This spring, if I get to go to China, because I'm pretty sure they'll let me out, but letting me back in may be interesting.
Oh gosh, yeah, and it's a shame that you got to worry about these things or have those concerns.
Yeah, although I'm sure the government would, yeah, not that I'm in any way actually changing anything with my, you know, loudness and being obnoxious, but yeah, having me out of their hair, yeah. Might be kind of nice.
Great Scott, are we still on?
Yes, we are.
I just got on. I don't know what you're talking about. The party just started, baby.
Yeah, I think I'm going to sign off. I think I'm going to go for nap 2.0.
Yeah, some of you doing all-nighters.
Some of us just started a morninger.
I did a 7-hour break. All right, guys. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Pope, are you around again for real or just in the channel?
Yep.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were. Welcome back to our after party, Nilly. Whatever this is.
I think this group is kind of the people who, you know, the party has wound down and they're still hanging out, like, trying to keep it going.
Well, sort of. It depends, I guess, but yeah.
So I woke to hearing you guys talk about Google Glass. Anyone want to rekindle that?
Yeah, that was earlier. Just somebody just having you have in America apparently, and in England it would there'll be you know there'd be absolutely loads of like privacy concerns to do with that. So I don't really see it hitting off here anytime soon. But I'm sure Pope can comment on this as well. He's in England as well.
Well, the thing that I've found interesting about it is everyone is worried about it legally, when we should really worry about it culturally. You know,
yeah, that's exactly what I feel.
Yeah, you know, we have certain things already established. You don't use, you know, you don't hang your camera underneath the divider in the toilet and try to take pictures of the person next to you. So when you're in the bathroom, it's probably the best thing to take them and put them on top of your head so they point at the ceiling, so that people who are concerned about it don't think you're taking pictures of their junk.
Yeah, and, you know, not knowing, you know, always having to be on watch. You know, whilst it's possible for anyone to record, you know, have their phone recording a conversation, you know, when I'm having a chat with someone, there's a social norm that you generally don't do that. And it's kind of an accepted social norm that you don't record people unwittingly. Whereas what Glass does is it puts it right in your face that they could be doing that, and it makes it a lot more obvious that they could be doing recording your conversation, both audio and video. There's no ambiguity there at all. And so you always have to be more cognizant of the fact that the person standing opposite you may be recording what you're doing, or the person nearby you in the same room as you, or, you know, wherever you are, could be recording you. And that just makes me feel uncomfortable, not because they're recording, but because it places the onus on everybody else in the room to ask the person with Google Glass, are you recording?
The whole thing has come down to the Glass people. I'd have a separate model that says, no, I'm not recording your ass because I don't have a camera.
Well, then you've got that whole, you know, like cell phones, you know, well, does this one have a camera? Does this one not? Does this have this feature? That's all kind of irrelevant. That's trying to use technology to solve a social problem, where we already have things in place. If someone's playing on their phone while you're talking to them, they're an asshole. So maybe the person that has the glass on their face while they're looking at you talking, you know, if they don't just move it up to their forehead or on top of their head, we'll just call them glassholes.
But I mean, a guy going in a restroom, you know, and shining his a phone or the glass, you know, under the, you know, yeah, we can agree that's kind of creepy.
I was using that as an example, as like the most flagrant foul of, you know, social norms. But you know, yeah, it could be anything where there's a, you know, sensitive time, you know, anytime somebody's got their genitalia out, you put it on top of your head. Anytime you're talking to someone and you actually care about that person hearing and understanding, and, you know, you being involved with that person, you just flip them up on top of your head. I mean, it seems like a fairly easy thing to do, but there will be people who don't want to do it because it's their right to wear this goofy fucking thing on their head. Well, that killed it.
I think we get these silent bits here and there.
Should we talk about things that America has that England doesn't?
I don't know, maybe.
I was floored that you guys don't have Redbox. I figured that everything McDonald's did ended up internationally.
Oh, is it McDonald's? Alright, didn't know that.
Yeah, it started, they were trying to find a way to sell French fries out of a vending machine. It was the original design, and something went wrong with it. You know, the fries tasted like ass or whatever. But they thought, well, let's not let a good design go to waste, and they stuck DVDs in it.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably work here as well. But to be honest, England's a bit like, let's see, movies. Well, one sub to movies. Okay, there's Sky Movies on TV. Yeah. But a lot of people don't have that because that's the extra channels that you pay more for. But then, you know, even Netflix is quite new. It's only sort of, I think, about 2 years now. And then there's not as much as America on there, as far as I know, by far as well. And also something like Hulu, which you Americans like going on about at times. There's no Hulu here. You know, we don't have Hulu.
Yeah, it must suck to live in a second world country.
No, actually, for TV shows, England is generally, I'd say, quite good compared to quite a lot of other countries in Europe, because there's BBC and all that, show ITV, but we get a lot of the American shows here. We get all the you have to have some of the channels in certain cases, but yeah, we get a lot of the American shows coming over. Occasionally, they are annoyingly a series behind America. There's a show I'm watching, and it's like a whole series behind America. I'm thinking, you know, that's not very good, really. But in general, we're quite up to date. I think they show it in America, and we get it soon after, or sometimes at the same time, pretty much. So, you know, we get a lot of the American shows, movies here as well, and our own stuff. So it's quite good, and there's no, and we get some of the other like shows coming over on BBC4 from Europe, like some of the like Danish shows and Swedish shows, the subtitle stuff. So we even get some of that coming over, which is good as well.
I was just poking fun. You don't have to, you know, stand up for your current place of living or anything like that. I'm just fucking with you.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
No, you actually have to, because we're here. All new Doctor Who's.
Am I the only person on the planet that doesn't like Doctor Who?
No, I've got a friend who doesn't like him.
I never really got into Doctor Who. I did watch some of the Christmas special, and a lot of people always say to me, if I say that, they'll go, "What? No, you gotta watch Doctor Who." But here's the thing, actually, to be honest, Doctor Who, yeah, I mean, sure, it's probably alright, I never got into it, but to be honest, I actually like the American TV shows mainly. Documentaries are good, whatever they are, American, Swedish, English, whatever in general, but yeah, I'm more of an American TV show person, to be honest.
That whole, oh my god, you have to watch Doctor Who, you'll love it thing, I think is what killed it for me. You know, every single person I bumped into was like, what, you don't like Doctor Who? What's wrong with you? And I'm like, get off your fucking couch and like go out and see the sunshine, dude. Well, yeah, in England, you go and see the rainy clouds.
I have to see it now that I've got it. I haven't seen it, so I'll have to grab that. But yeah, if you're talking about the old eps we used to get from Tom Baker, I'd have to fucking fight you 330.
I don't even know what the fuck a Tom Baker is. Remember, I'm not even 30 yet, so everything in the past happened at the exact same time. The Civil Rights Movement, the American Revolution, the Old West, and the sacking of Rome all happened at the exact same vertical time.
No, you were joking, aren't you? Are you actually 30 or over? Anyway.
I'm 28. So everything that happened previous to 1985, in my mind, happened at the exact same time, a time called the past.
Yeah, you're a little bit older than me, then.
I'm on the other side of that. I'm fucking old. Next year I'll be 50.
So then are you going to change your nick to 50-50-50?
Yeah, I may have to.
What I wanted to say is, probably not quite to the same extent as Doctor Who, but I assume this Game of Thrones is another example, really, like a show that, like, oh, you gotta watch that. Apparently it's the most pirated show as well, and of all time or whatever. But I think that's partly because, or at least in the case of the UK, that will probably be partly because it only shows on a channel called Sky Atlantic, which is only for Sky customers. So anybody on anything else, any of the other TV services in the UK, do not get that channel, so they won't get Game of Thrones. And they showed it on the first series a year later on Sky One, when I watched it. But, you know, I think, you know, it's so popular, and a lot of people won't have the channel actually shows on, so I assume that's partly why, at least the UK piracy of it, that will be the reason, probably a main reason why it's getting pirated in UK, probably as much as it does, because of what I just said, because of what channels it's shown on, because they brought out all the HBO stuff or whatever, and yeah, in America, I don't know what that's showing on, but yeah.
I've never seen it. There are certain shows I will just kind of refuse to watch because everyone else is in love with it, and I want to be that guy that goes, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Well, no Doctor Who for you then, or Game of Thrones, or The Simpsons, or
no,
or
Simpsons. See, I watched The Simpsons because I started watching The Simpsons when it started. I was a kid.
Yeah, but, yeah, same.
But there are certain things that. You know, it will happen, and I'll go, I have no fucking idea what this thing is, and I'm not catching up. I mean, I just 3-4 years ago, I just saw Battlestar Galactica, but since I was already so far removed from it, I decided to watch everything from the 70s onward, and was able to watch every single episode and every single webisode in 1 month.
Really?
Yeah. It was 10 hours of viewing a day.
Actually, yeah, I've caught up on series a bit like that as well, where you go for about 8 episodes in one night or whatever.
Yeah, I at this point I prefer for shows to do their entire run, and then I'll watch it.
And for those of you playing the game, it's light outside, and I am definitely goddamn hammered.
I think some people did that with Lost. I think there was something online actually before, and they kind of like Lost. Yeah, okay, I'm going to wait until it's all over. Or they saw a little bit and thought, oh, that's good, but no, I'm going to wait until it's all over, and then I'm going to watch it from the beginning. So yeah, Lost. But Lost is one that Lost used to be the other one. They like, right, you've got to go and watch Lost. Lost is so amazing. That, you know, that was announced Game of Thrones, but it was Lost before, and yeah.
Lost me when, because, you know, all my friends are, oh my god, you gotta watch this, and I'm like, I was almost about ready to fall for that trap, and then they start going, what the fuck is going on? It's like they're just riding themselves into circles now, they don't know what the hell they're doing.
Oh yeah, the whole last season, when they said they wouldn't be, no, they're not in purgatory, and then they said, oh yeah, we'll start over again with, new stories for everybody. No, I mean Lost and J.J. Abrams. I don't think I'm ever gonna reconcile that.
See, I just don't give a shit enough. My free time is so limited at this point now that if something even begins to piss me off, it's dead to me, and I just go on.
Yeah, why is that? What do you do anyway?
I, along with my full-time job, I'm the director of a thing in town called the Hardware Co-op, where we take previously used computers and repair them if they need it, and stick Linux on them and give them to underprivileged kids, nonprofits, things like that. And anything that can't be reused is then responsibly recycled.
All right, okay, yeah.
And when I'm not doing either one of those two things, I teach Shaolin Kung Fu.
What about your full-time job? What's that?
I am the sole IT guy I work for two seminaries that are in a partnership, so I'm kind of in both organizations, but also outside of it. It's weird.
Yeah, okay. Oh, we lost Popey again, didn't we? Looks like it.
Popey, come back. You can blame it all on me. So what do you do to survive on the planet?
Oh, well, that's not really very exciting to talk about stuff like that. You should ask me probably, what do you do for Magia? Or something like that. That's a bit more exciting to talk about.
So you have the job you're ashamed of, and then the thing that you do? I used to be there.
not exactly, but I can't believe, I'm not really going to comment on that. But
Are you a fucking spy?
I'm a spy. I'm spying on
my
you
five
right
and
now.
My six. Are you fucking James Bond? Don't lie to me, motherfucker.
I'm spying on you right now.
It's gathering intel about those dim-witted Americans and their love of vending machines that sell them shit they don't need.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're gonna copy the idea and pull it in England, and with more than just DVDs and games and music, it's going to have something else in there, and it's going to be really successful, and we're going to earn billions, and you're not going to get any of the profits, unfortunately.
It'll do video games, DVDs, and fish and chips.
Oh yeah, fish and chips, of course. It's called Have Fish and Chips. Wouldn't be very English without fish and chips, would it? We're down to three people.
Well, there's us two and 50. I don't know if he's quite human at this point.
I'm still here.
He's an alcohol-fueled zombie at this point.
Damn straight.
So, it's light outside. Have you stopped drinking? Like, is that when it stops?
I'll stop drinking when the ball runs out.
So you're less of a zombie and more like a booze vampire.
Pretty much.
You know, it's light outside here today, but it hardly makes any difference because it's just it's an absolute cloud day, rain. You know, it hardly makes any difference if it had been night. You know, it's not much daylight out there.
So it's Wednesday. It's overcast and kind of rainy. It's Wednesday in England.
Yeah, it's Wednesday. Well, it doesn't always rain here, but you know, it's just, well, it's winter, isn't it? So. Well, I would rather have snow or a bit of snow, but it doesn't quite go like that. Sometimes it does, though. Problem is, if it does snow, then the whole country is enough. Then the whole country is in a mess because it can't really deal with all the transport issues and so on. But apparently Sweden can be like this as well, and they get snow pretty much every year, and they still have problems dealing with it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, even here we have trouble getting things cleaned up sometimes.
Yeah.
So I was talking to a friend of mine recently, and I was putting shit on England, you know, because, you know, what else is there to do? And I had mentioned that it rains all the time, and or you know, that it was cloudy, and it, yeah, and they were like, really? I go, yeah. It's like every day in England they have a 60% chance of rain.
Not quite true, but the idea is it rains a lot, and people do tend to complain about the weather. Well, not everyone, but it is, yeah.
I said it so matter-of-factly, though, the person believed me and walks around saying it like it's a piece of trivia.
Oh, so, right.
So 330, you jazz for OSP Live number 2?
If I can swing it. So like I was saying earlier, I may end up in China. If it isn't at the same time, it may be close to that. And so I'll probably be broke, because that trip to China is going to cost me about $3,000.
But why are we going to China anyway? I kind of missed earlier or whatever, I don't know.
My Kung Fu teacher's teacher.
Oh yeah, the Kung Fu thing. I'm sure with that.
Yeah, he's organizing a trip for a bunch of us to go, and so we'll go see, you know, the old spots. You know, go to the different provinces.
You did say earlier. I remember now, but yeah, you gotta self-fund that by the sounds of it. Yeah, that's true. It's gonna be expensive, isn't it? If you go do that.
Yeah, it'll be rough, but it's a pretty cool thing. We get to go see the place in Canton where they had the stage fights. There was a time in China where there was 10 families that had the eldest sons of the family were undefeated fighters. They had a call out to all of China and even some places around there, people would show up to fight them. And they said, any style and any weapon will beat you. And they were undefeated for, you know, like a generation or two. And so we'll get to see the platform that they fought on. Because you could win by, you know, knockout, by submission, or by knocking them off the platform.
Have you been out of America before? Because sometimes people in America are so big, you kind of, I think a lot of people sort of get stuck there. There's so many states, it's so big, you kind of don't really, maybe go to Canada, maybe Mexico, but it's about it, I think, isn't it? A lot of people don't really go out out of North America, do they?
No, I mean, it's happening more often now. America is such a big place that you can go from, one or two states over and things are completely different. But in that one or two states, it's like you going to Germany.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've only been to, like, Florida before and, the airport in North Carolina, that kind of counts. Maybe. Not really, but yeah, I know the states can be quite different, I guess, like you're saying.
Well, I went to South Carolina for the Southeast Linux Fest. And from where I am in Indiana, it took me 13 hours on a bus.
if it's long, big enough, far enough, sure, 13 hours.
Saying, a flight to Iowa took me 5 hours, 6 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the country itself is so big that, yeah, you can go, you know, to different parts of the country and find, you know, completely different climates and almost cultures. A lot of it's been kind of flattened out and made extremely white, but
white? What do you mean white?
Made to be very Anglo and, you know, very very what we would call European. Yeah, there's not the ethnic pieces of a lot of these places are dying off.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Because the consumer culture has taken over all other cultures. So, you know, the only bits that remain of cultures that were previously big in an area are the kitschy parts that you can sell.
Do you mean, are you talking about, like, how everything's developed and there's not that much farmland or forest left, or do you mean something else?
But also on a sociological level, like, there are parts of the desert Southwest that, you know, were aboriginal lands. I mean, there were people there that had lived the same way for, you know, hundreds or thousands of years, and now it's, you know, it's a subdivision full of middle-class white people, and the middle-class white people are walking around with, like, Aztec-printed shirts and things like that. You know, the local high school may have an indigenous person as their mascot, that kind of
thing. Right, yeah, okay, I guess. But yeah, Europe's a bit like, yeah, you just kind of go over and you go into different countries and it can be all different there as well. But Europe's a lot smaller than America as well, I think.
Yeah, quite a bit. But that's why you guys also do things like learn two or three languages, because the odds of you bumping into someone who speaks a language other than you is greatly increased from America, where we kind of have to go out of our way to find someone who doesn't speak English.
Oh, no, I mean, they do teach languages at school here and stuff, but thing is, actually, if you go to the mainland of Europe, you'll find that nearly everyone speaks English anyway, so, you know, English is a kind of global language or whatever, and then German is a reasonably big language, and French and Spanish, depending on where you are, but then, remember, there was an idea that maybe, actually, something on the news before, but and it goes with your China stuff, I'm thinking of it as well, I think, is they were talking about how maybe actually schools should start teaching Chinese because China is such a, you know, it's becoming such a big economy now, isn't it, and all that, so it might actually be worth teaching Chinese at school rather than German or French in the future, you know.
Yeah, there's a, at least in my town, there's a thing they put gifted children into that they call early college. So sorry, I'm trying to translate to things from the American school system to European. So
gifted, are you talking about, depends on what you mean in the context, carry on. Yeah, carry on.
They're extremely bright, they're clever.
Yeah, yeah, I thought you meant gifted as in bright. Yeah, really clever ones.
I wasn't meaning gifted as some kind of joke, as they're retarded. No, these kids are, they are on their shit. It's creepy when you talk to some of them. But they started teaching these kids in middle school, which is pre-high school, but not quite.
Yeah, what we call reception, I think, like before school started properly. Well, no, actually, no, that's more like kindergarten, I think, in translation.
Yeah.
And but there's play school, and there's, yeah.
This would be year, like, 6 through 8.
No, 6 to 8 is later on.
Yeah.
Great, yeah. But anyway, but carry on.
They started teaching these kids, across the curriculum, they all learn Mandarin, the main Chinese dialect.
Mandarin, yeah.
Because they just say, you know, China is up and coming, it's, you know, it's going to be here, you need to learn a second language anyway, why the hell not? You know, instead of teaching, oh, we'll teach this group of kids German, and this group of kids Spanish, and this group of kids French, you know, as they so chose, they were just like, no, we'll just make it easy. Mandarin, we're going to go.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's getting big, and it's, well, a lot of the stuff is made over there as well, isn't it? So it's a good language to learn.
Yeah, and the reason it's called early college is they actually, when they graduate high school, they graduate not only high school, but they graduate from a community college with a 2-year degree. So the two things happen at once.
Uh-huh. 5150, is he still around, or did he collapse or something? I think it's just us.
Oh god, what will we do now?
It's all gonna get recorded, I think, and put online until we go off.
Ah, crap. So we probably shouldn't have talked all that shit about Ken Fallon, right?
Oh, Ken can take it.
Oh, he is it.
So can we all agree that Ken Fallon is probably a Pikey? I just see him in, you know, in his little caravan updating HPR wildly.
It's all that shit we talked
about Canonical. I can just see Pokey gathering the legal team. No, Pokey, I don't think you do that shit.
Did any of you actually meet Ken Fallon? Like I did.
No, I've never been to Europe.
Yeah, when I went to Old Camp. Oh, well, okay, 2014 now, so. Old Camp 12 then, 2 years ago. I went to the HPR stand and I was chatting to Ken Fallon at that stand. You know, I wasn't really into podcasting at the time as such, been on one or two, but yeah, I was in the HPR stand, so I talked to him there. And yeah. And then has anyone met, I don't know, Richard Stallman or anyone like that, you know, I've saw him do a speech last year. Well, 2013, so last year, I'll say now. And that was good. 2 hours on the spot, except for water breaks. Has anyone, have you met anyone famous or kind of thing from the open source community? That's what I meant, my question.
I've met...
As a guy who just f***s anything, still f***.
I think he's drunk enough now he can't hold his push to talk about.
Well. I've met Popey as well, actually.
Say, I've met Mad Dog, John Mad Dog Hall several times, and I met Bradley Kuhn at the first Self.
Yeah, Bradley, I think that's the name, the Free Software Foundation guy, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously at FOSDEM, I've been to FOSDEM, so I was there watching a talk with them on the panel, and this Cafozem's coming up quite soon at the end of this month. Looking forward to that. They should be over there again by the looks of it. So yeah, I mean, you obviously go to these events and you can meet certain people or be in the same room as them at least. And does anyone use Identicare?
I used to.
Yeah, mine's gone blank. It's changed to Pumpire. That's right. I mean, I talked to even a bit last year as well when I came across them at Fosdam about stuff, you know. But it's nice, these events, isn't it? Because you can go off and you can go and meet all these people who are into the same kind of stuff or similar interests, you know. And whereas normally, I don't know about you, but you might have your Linux user group or something like that, but in general, you're kind of surrounded by people who, in daily life, who don't have those interests unless you may be working in the field or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My favorite thing about the various Linux events, especially, you know, over here, was it was a meeting of the tribes. You know, all the people I hung out with in IRC were there. So it was more fun to hang out with them than it, you know, was to try to meet famous people.
No, yeah, I mean, I've met Dan Lynch because of Old Camp as well, for example, you know. But yeah, it's interesting. I've only been to two so far, or twice for both of them, Fosdem and Old Camp. But yeah, it's awesome having these events, and you can go along as part of a project like I did with this Magia one. You know, I just sort of said, right, I want to get involved with that. I followed it for a year online, and so I said, right, I'm going to get involved, I'm going to do something, I'm going to do some of the marketing stuff or whatever, and I have my RC channels, I'll do this, I'll do that. And you go along, and you just kind of like, you're just part of that project, you're just one of them, you're in that project, it doesn't really matter what you do. And that's the other nice thing about open source, is a lot of these projects, you're accepted, you're part of that, whatever you're doing. You just have to do some really technical development, you could be doing artwork, you could be doing whatever, but you're part of the team, you know, and it's nice, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about the free and or open source community, is the hierarchy is fairly flat. Yeah, I was talking about how, you know, meeting these famous people, but at the same time, you know, when you first get into the community, there are these people that you know, and you're like, oh, they're famous. And then within a year or two, you're like, ah, yeah, it's so-and-so. The guys from Tilts, you know, the first year I went, I was like, oh my god, I love your guys' show, that's great. You know, and within a year or two, Dan's showing me his ass and threatening to rape my mouth.
Yeah, I mean, sure, if you go to the event again or whatever, you'll meet these people again, and then they're kind of like, oh, awesome, I met so-and-so who I knew online. That kind of feeling will start to wear off a bit, if I think that's what you're trying to say as well, because you'll get to know them a bit or whatever, you'll meet them again, it's not really the same, is it, as the first time?
Well, it's not that it wears off, it's that you kind of the longer you're around, the more you kind of step through this very short hierarchy, and you know, then all of a sudden you're a somebody, you know, and somebody is excited to meet you.
Yeah, I had that actually at Fosdam last year, 2013, right? Because I didn't realise he was there. I might have talked to him on IRC saying, look, I'm going to go to Fosdam and all that. And there was a guy who, a D developer of another Linux distribution, a bit similar to this one to some extent. I came back to the stand for this project on the second day, and it's like, oh, this guy he was looking for you, he wants to, there's this guy looking for you, and he's like, right, okay. And, you know, I got back to the stand, and this guy was there, and it was, you know, it was the lead developer of this distro, and, you know, he was all excited to, he really wanted to make sure he'd met me whilst he was over as well. He'd come from Colorado, you know, he'd been on a 7-hour flight going off to Brussels, it's quite, and, you know, he was really excited to meet me, I think. And that was pretty nice. You know, I mean, I chatted to him here and there online and got to know him on IRC, but it was just really nice that he just wanted to, like, make sure he met me whilst he was over, and I had no idea he was even there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I love about this community, is that, you know, the people at the bottom look up, and the people that are being looked up at feel weird about it. Like the highest level of the very short hierarchy is like creeped out by being at the top of something.
But also nice is you go to an event, you're part of some project, you can meet people from different countries, you're all the same, you're all part of that team. Magia is a lovely example of this because I go off to Fosdem and I'm meeting people from France, I'm meeting people from Germany, I'm meeting people from Holland, I'm meeting people from some Wales, possibly Finland, it's all. And then actually this next time we're going to have a guy coming from San Diego. He hasn't been before. He's been to other events in America and so on. And he's going to come over from San Diego. I'm going to meet him a day earlier than I would have done. Going to go a day earlier over. And it's just... And that's going to be quite interesting probably as well.
So what do you do over at Mangia?
Yep, so I wanted to get asked. I've used various distros, Fedora Core 2 to Ubuntu for years, to some PC Linux OS trying whilst Magia 1 was in development and things like that. I've gone through various distros in the last 10 years. I started with Fedora Core 2 in 2004. So anyway, I used to help out in Ubuntu channels and so on. And when it came to 2010, I thought, I want to do something a bit more official with open source. I want to do something a bit more proper. I don't want to just do online support and so on. I want to get involved with the projects. And I thought, Ubuntu, no, because of certain reasons. So, and as I'm thinking, like, I want to get involved with the project, but what can I do? I'm not really a developer. What can I do? I was thinking, like, what kind of a distribution or an upstream project, maybe, or whatever I'm thinking, And then as I'm thinking this, the whole announcement of Magia, the Madream before it happened in September, and I'm thinking, like, this could be quite interesting. It's going to be a new Linux distribution, it's going to be a community distribution, it's going to be, everyone's going to be a volunteer and all that, and it's going to be very democratic. You vote on who's on the teams, you vote on who's having a deputy leader, you vote on who, it's all about voting and so on. And I thought that could be interesting. It's based on Mandrake, which has been around for a while, Mandrake, the old name. And I thought that could be interesting. So I basically set up an IRC channel, went along on the day of the announcement later on, and just sort of kept an eye on it for about a year, reading the blog, checking out the mailing lists, and thinking, do I really want to get more involved with this or not? Kind of had a year to sort of make my mind up before I decided, we'll join the marketing team. I will actually join this team. And the woman tried to get me to join before, and I did that. And then it's kind of strange. 3 months later, sort of thing, I got asked to go to Fosdem 2011 by somebody online, but I thought, I haven't been to an open source event before. I don't really know these people enough online. I'm not going to Fosdem, not this year. But anyway, the year after, 2011, December 2011, I decided to join the team. Came to about March, and then I got, it's like voting time for who to be the leader and deputy leader of the team. And I got the mailing list votes for the deputy leader of the marketing team. So I had that position for a little bit, and then the team merged with two others, and I've just basically what I do is, when I decide to obviously promote this distribution. It could be a podcast, it could be public speaking. I've done some public speaking about it in the past as well, and I've been to the event, and I've always said to myself, like, I want to get involved with the kind of more technical side a bit, like the quality assurance more properly or something, but then I find I didn't quite get into that. But it led me to the LUG. I started getting to Linux user group because of this distribution. I knew about it 2 years before, but I didn't really go along for certain reasons. And then there's a speech locally about Magia. You can find that on YouTube if you're interested. And then I did, and then more recently I found out about another group about to do public speaking. And, so I'm sort of like a marketing person, but when I decide to, because it's all like a voluntary thing.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I get you. I'm an ambassador for Fedora, so similar roles.
But yeah, and I get to vote on the like background and things like that. We've been doing that again recently. Because we've got a release candidate. My dear, for release candidate is scheduled for the 6th of January, and that will have the new artwork in it as well. So that's good. But that's part of the team I'm on. We kind of that's part of it as well. You kind of like decide on the background, and you can do the website if you want to, and you can do the and things like that as well. So yeah.
Cool. So how long you been doing that?
Yeah, like I said, sort of found out about it, started joining the team in September 2011 and so on from there, really. But it's like the first project I decided to like properly contribute to, because like I said before, I'd helped with Ubuntu and IRC and things like that in the past, but I wanted to get more involved with a project, and you know, various things led me to this one, it's been very, some of the things that have happened as a result of this project, to get involved and decided to be involved. I mean, it's really been, it's all kind of linked together, and it really has been life changing. And that's the other nice thing about open source. It can really change someone's life. And like you sort of said earlier, you can go from a kind of nobody or somebody who isn't really anyone as such, to somebody who is a bit more of a someone. I think that's kind of what you said earlier as well. Is that what you said earlier? Sort of thing?
Yeah.
But the difference is, with something like this distro and something like Ubuntu and Mint and whatever, is in general the attitude is kind of like, yes, you can go and help promote it and get it out there more, but general attitude is kind of like, from certain people in the community, is the attitude is more like, there isn't really a competition, it's a good distro for those who want to use it. That's the kind of general attitude that the project has through as a whole, I think, from a lot of people. It's not a distro that's has the goal of like becoming the most popular Linux distribution or something like that. That's not really the goal of the project.
My favorite term for this was coined by Ted Hagar, who used to be the community manager at OpenSUSE, and he called it cooperation.
Is it cooperation? Collaboration?
It was cooperation, but being competitive at the same time. Because everybody thinks the distribution that they're working on is the best one, or you obviously wouldn't be doing it. You're not going to pour time into something that you think is crap. But at the same time, you know, we're part of this larger thing that is trying to accomplish something. And so, you know, internally, you know, we get into, you know, petty kind of, you know, stupid bickering arguments. But to the outside, it looks like a kind of cohesive thing going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you mean the distro? Like, we're all kind of on the same team, even though we've got our own distros, our own preferred distros, our own preferred interfaces, etc. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the free and open source community is one team, and we happen to, inside of that team, poke at each other, you know, incessantly. But I think, you know, and that's where the competition comes in. You know, oh, is foo better than bar? You know, those arguments done constructively. I mean, those arguments do kind of take on their own thing and go off into some kind of weird magical land where nothing good ever comes of it. But a lot of times that drives innovation within an insulated group.
But yeah, but I mean, you go for a distro because of your kind of your own reasons, your own personal reasons. So, for example, with this one, what really appealed to me was the whole thing about, right, this is going to be a full command driver, right? But it's going to be all non-profit, everyone's going to be volunteer, all that kind of aspect. There's a nice diagram explaining how the community like is set up on the site as well. But that's what appealed to me, because I thought, like, you know, that's very much so in the spirit of open source, isn't it? To have all these volunteers and doing stuff. Obviously, you have paid developers as well, which is absolutely fine as well. But I just like the whole idea of volunteers, because when I found that about open source to begin with, I when I was younger, you know, I had the impression that a lot of people are volunteers, and I think that's awesome that you have these people who are volunteering their free time and doing all this stuff. But obviously, I'm going to add here, you obviously need paid developers as well, because for certain projects, or they just simply wouldn't happen, it wouldn't work, and that's fine as well. But you know, it's just great how you have a mixture of all these different types of people in open source and all these different projects as a result, and it's just amazing. We've got a whole ecosystem of all this, you know, all this software that's just exists. It's just amazing, really, isn't it, what can be done? But even though at times you get all this infighting and so on as well, but despite that, you get all this great software anyway, you know. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's incredibly amazing. But it I was just thinking about this. It seems less amazing the more you're around it, because it becomes the norm.
Oh right, yeah, well yeah, sure. But
and so then when you look at the way everything else is done, you're like, this is barbaric and back-assward and, you know, ridiculous. How would anyone ever get anything done this way? And that's yeah, it's kind of funny, yeah. Because in my job, I have to deal with a lot of proprietary systems. And it's like, if someone would just give me the fucking source code, I would have a look at this and see if I can do something about it.
Yeah, but what is a bit sad, though, is when you get... sometimes the my distro is better than yours, or no, mine's better, or interfaces, and kind of like things that can happen because of that. Like, Because in general, I think people should be more accepting that, look, everyone is a bit different, but we're all in the same team. But at times, that really does not come out in various examples, you know.
I think those times, the big times where that happens, are few and far between. They're going to happen. You know, making a big deal about it is something for the press. The people who are following.
Yeah, Ken's back, I think.
Damn it, Ken! Well, yeah. Quit ruining everything.
I can give. Yeah, I do. Actually, I'm doing an event. Yeah, I'm doing an event later this year with some people from my Linux user group, and we had to go for the whole, like, right, what distributions are we going to have? What interfaces are we going to have? Because this is going to be aimed at the general public. And and then the idea of how many are we going to have? We're going to have two, or we're going to have three, or we're going to have maybe more than that. And I put my distro forward, of course, but it didn't get it didn't get accepted by the others, which is a bit unfortunate. But I guess so be it. I mean, the idea is to have an event on the day where people will come, and from some people will come from Windows and finger market, right, and they will get introduced to some of these Linux distributions, and they will possibly make the switch. And so in the interest as a whole, that's kind of like a good thing. I could have just quit and said, look, you outvoted my thing, I'm not going to do it anymore. But I thought, you know, I'm not going to do that, because in the wider good of things, it's still a good thing, even though it's now being done with these... all these other distributions, not my own personal thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, those allegiances change. You know, you may not always be the Mangia guy. You know, you may go, yo, I've had enough of this, or this thing piques my interest, or so.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I used to really be into Ubuntu in the past for years. You know, I was very much so into that. But then I kind of then. Changes happened, and now I'm obviously into this project, and then you might move on to something else as well later on, depending what happens. But that's life, isn't it? Things change.
Yeah, but that's why, you know, people who have their head firmly placed on their shoulders tend not to get incredibly upset when their preferred distribution of the moment isn't featured in some public arena. It's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, you just go, all right, well, I guess I'll deal with this Linux distribution for the time being.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've, you know, that's what I'm doing here. It's like I'm just saying, really.
So when talking amongst the group, you can do that high and mighty. Oh, I guess I will bring myself down to the level of this, but you should never do that in public.
Say that again? I think I've lost the context. Or
like when you're talking to the people in your lug and you're just, you know, having fun and, you know, poking fun at people, you can say, oh, I guess since Mangia didn't make it, I will step down off my pedestal and use your common distribution. And then, you know, when you're talking to the public, you just go, oh yeah, Linux is great, all the distributions are great.
No, it wasn't like that. I mean, these are quite good choices that were made. It's just I kind of wanted my own thing in as well, but we ended up with too much choice, basically, so something had to go, and that's all, really.
Yeah, really the important thing is to keep ridiculousness out of the public. I had a spat with one of the big guys in the Perl community one time because he told the listeners of a podcast that he would never run Linux on anything that was important when he was to be the poster child for open source.
Oh, what was this?
I was just some ignorant internet spat I had with someone several years ago, but I was just trying to reiterate the importance of being proper in public, and yeah, you know, you can choose to be a wanker later on.
But I'm looking forward to this event because it's going to be, because we've got like one Windows, like we've got certain interfaces, and it'll just be interesting to see what people actually go for and stuff, and how many people actually turn up as well.
And so what different window managers are you showing?
They're going with KDE, Unity, and Cinnamon.
That's a fairly decent cross-section.
And it's supposed to be kind of more about the interfaces, I think, as well, rather than the actual distros that are underneath that. So yeah, it'll be interesting what happens.
Most people won't know that there's a difference underneath. All they see is the GUI, and for a lot of people, that's all that really matters. Yeah, the difference between Ubuntu and Debian and Fedora and Mangia, and yeah, if someone else is admin for that system, they don't know any different.
Yeah, that's I think that's the point. That there's people, I think the idea is basically people are going to come along, they're going to see the demonstration computers, and they're going to basically pick something going by an interface rather than any of the, you know, the technical this and that, what distro is it and all the rest of it, you know.
Early on, I would, you know, when I was doing more Linux evangelism than I am now because I've run out of time, but yeah, people would say, oh, what distribution should I use? And I'm like, whatever everyone else around you is using. That way you can get help.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But when I when I did a talk about this one, so 2012, I got, you know, afterwards, like, I had some guys coming up afterwards, like, yeah, good talk and all that. And I got asked by somebody, why should I use this over Ubuntu? And I wasn't very, at the time, I wasn't very kind of prepared for that kind of question because I hadn't really done the a talk and stuff. And I'm thinking, but I think that's a good approach to have. It's basically, you know what? If you want, you can use whatever distro you want. You can use whatever interface you want. And instead of the like, no, my distro is better than yours, my distro is better than yours, or all that. Because actually, when I got introduced to Linux in the first place, and open source, and like, I'd been trying out Chrome and Windows and all that, but I was quite young, and I got a friend of mine, he introduced me into open source in sort of 2003, 2004, and he was using Slackware, and he always said at the time, I said to him, and I said, okay, what distro should I use? And he would be like, you know what, I use Slackware, but I'm not going to tell you what distro to use. You have to decide yourself. And I ended up picking between Debian and Fedora and so on from there. And I think that's a good thing in general to have people making their own choice, but obviously for certain events, or like what I was talking about, or if you're going to convert your family over to a distro or something like that, you know, then you might have to pick four people. But in general, it's good that people make their own choice, I think, yeah, instead of having it done for them by someone.
Yeah, we've kind of had that go on at the Kung Fu school that I teach at. One of the other teachers is also an IT guy, and he's a BSD guy. And so he and I are always poking fun at each other, playfully. I mean, you know, it's all in love. But, you know, the computer at the Kung Fu school has to run Windows, has to run Linux or BSD, because the two guys that know anything about computers don't use anything but those two. And so, like, you know, everybody else is like, what the hell is going on with this machine? And be like, oh, no, that's cool. It's, you know, it's building this. It's doing whatever. But, yeah, it's like, as long as the fundamental things happen, like, can you watch a YouTube video? Can you check your email? Yeah, as long as those things are functioning, everything is perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's what, for this event, obviously, we're going to be, they'll get covered as well. Yes, you can do this, yes, you can do that. But what I wanted to go back to, actually, is the whole idea of we talked a little bit about competition, I think, distributions and competition, and all the my better is, my distro is better than yours and all that. And it's just kind of sad in a way. I mean, I'm just thinking what I'm going to actually say here. I think to some extent, actually, the whole thing about, like, right, we've got all this choice, which is great, but then the whole thing about, no, you should be using my distro, or you should be using this interface, or that interface isn't any good, or and all the rest of it, and people not quite being accepting of all these different choices. I think to some extent that, well, if we're going to talk about popularity of this going, you know, Linux going more, Linux distributions going more mainstream, in that kind of context, I think to some extent all this opinions and all this stuff about this one being better than that one and all the rest of it is probably what holds back you know, desktop Linux from going more popular, really, but to some extent, because certain people are gonna, you know, they're gonna go online and they're gonna read some of it, and they're gonna get all confused, and, you know. And with something else, like a Mac, you don't have that, really, because you have the one system. I'm totally for choice. I just want to say here, the idea that a lot of choice is fragmentation, I disagree with that as well, because I've seen that a lot online. I think it's great to have loads of different interfaces and distros, but I think that it just should be collaborate. I believe in distro collaboration where people are all accepting of each other. You go to an open source event, it's a great example. You got your various FOSDEM, FOSDEM, I'll use FOSDEM as an example. You go off there, they put the distributions in, say, one building and some of the other projects, and you can have LibOff, you can have OpenOffice there, you can have whatever, and you know, people kind of just like, okay, yeah, this is our stand, you got your stand there, and people just kind of get along with each other, and from what I've seen anyway, and there's none of this like, oh, you know what, oh, I've got my distro here, but, you know, I don't like yours, so I'm gonna, there's none of that. People just kind of get on together at these events, and they realize that they're all a bit different, and then you go online and it's all opinionated and so on, and that's the difference, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, I get what you mean. But you have to remember that not everyone's goal is the popularity of Linux. Some people have, you know, some people, the only thing they're concerned about is superior technology.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
There are some people that their only concern is software freedom. And those people won't always jive with our kumbaya, let's all hug and, you know, play tambourines and have a drum circle. And those people are perfectly okay and are great to have in the community, as well as the kumbaya, let's all love each other people.
You get some people who I met some, well, you know, some people, they're just like, you know what, market share of desktop Linux, It's like, they don't care, you know, they're just happy that they're using it themselves and don't care about getting more users, but that's fine, you know, it's, and so I'm assuming some of these people are even going to be developers of certain projects that are really important, and they don't really care about market share and all that, but that's fine, you know, you need like a mixture of different people, I think, in general, for a lot of things, and it could be open source, or it could be, someone else. It's good to have different opinions, but ideally people should kind of accept each other, that they might always agree with each other, and just kind of get on and you know, things go forward rather than getting standstill on something because of different opinions or whatever, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, I agree with you that a general kind of getting along is important, but I mean, there are some arguments that should be had, and should be had with absolute fury and honesty. You know, the free software contingency. Those people, it is a black or white situation. Is the software free software? Yeah, and those people should have a voice, even if you don't agree with them. We need people that are as far to one side as you can have, so that you know the limitations of the project you're working on. You know, without people like Richard Stallman, we have no idea, you know.
Oh, I didn't quite mean that, but yeah, I mean, that's great as well that we got Richard Stallman, definitely, because he's how he expresses his opinions and so on. But what I meant is kind of like, we should all kind of, in general, it's all like you're on the same team, and you should kind of get on that. Realize you're on the same team. You might have different opinions here and there, but you kind of want the same overall goal. Well, I'm talking like kind of like the popularity thing again, market share or whatever. So it's like some people are like, I want desktop Linux to go really popular, but they don't like Ubuntu, it could be, or something, But if you look at the wider picture, you realize that something like Ubuntu is actually going to make desktop Linux go more popular, even though it might not be quite their distro or their interface, or, you know. You still there?
Yeah, sorry. I agree that, you know, again, that getting along is, you know, a best tactic. But, you know, again, remember that, You know, there are people who are on the same team that don't have the same goal.
Oh yeah, yeah, true.
You know, there will be people who are most definitely on our team, but will, you know, that see certain things as problematic. You know, and again, I've jumped from team to team, within the team a lot. You know, I've been on the free software side of it, and still kind of am. You know, that things by default should be free software. You know, your first choice should always be free software. But and as a younger person, I believed that and tried to force other people to believe that. And in the same way, you know, at a time I was very, you know, everyone should use Linux. This is the greatest thing on the planet. And, you know, and I was part of that popularity group. And what I ended up doing a lot of times was alienating myself from the other groups because I didn't find their goals to be as important as the goals I was after. And, at this point in my life, I'm very much, you know, people can have differing opinions and even opinions that go directly against each other, and everyone can be right at the exact same time.
Oh, yeah, I think I see what you mean, yeah. I was thinking the same thing you talked about, kind of like, I think you were saying, like, when you were young, you were kind of like, you know, open source or free software is the best thing, and you should go use that because da-da-da-da-da-da. Is that what you meant as well?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and there's personally, you know, my own beliefs, that is still my belief. But I've changed my tactic for dealing with that. You know, when someone says, you know, hey, what kind of computer should I buy? You know, I tend to give suggestions for types of computers I know will run Linux well, even if they're not going to run Linux, knowing that someday, you know, they have that horrible virus that trashes their computer, and you can go, you know, you do the thing where you go, well, you can buy a copy of Windows for like $150, or, you know, I've got this Linux thing that's free and does the same thing.
Yeah. Hang on, I'm just thinking. I agree with the whole idea that kind of in general that open source or free software is the kind of like the way to go, and sort of the best thing because but obviously I can see a place for closed source software as well if we're going to be on this discussion at times and things like that as well.
I see the place for it for the user. I kind of morally I have issues with it morally. And some of it is the free software thing where, you know, the individual user deserves freedom. But I'm also an anti-capitalist, so I don't think anyone should make any money doing anything. You know, money should, yeah. A financial transaction is a coercive form of tyranny. So, yeah, in the same way that, yeah, I can't push that on people either because, you know, now all of a sudden now I'm the dictator. So I've gotten softer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you express certain opinions, it would apply to anything really. If you go and say to some other person who doesn't agree with that opinion, depending on what it is, it could be all like, it doesn't really work, and they think differently, and then you get some issues or whatever.
Yeah, so, yeah, Linux evangelism is fun and difficult, because you have to, starting out, like, as you meet a person, you kind of have to speak to all three things at the same time without excluding anything. So you have to speak about the technical superiority, the popularity and fun, and the free and open source aspect of it, and then as you're talking to the person, you see which one piques their interest, and you kind of work that way. It's fun. I love talking to people, yeah, at events and just out and about free software, because it, where I used to turn a lot of people off because I only spoke, you know, as one group at a time, speaking for the whole community, it's a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, it could be fun to go and tell somebody about, it could be online or possibly otherwise, somebody who doesn't really know about open source. It can be fun to go and tell them like about it and what it means, and source code is available to the general public and all the rest of it, you know. But of course, the issue with that as well is, depending on who you're talking to, it could be too overwhelming, it could be too much information, and they can't really handle it. And so you've got to kind of do it in a certain way. You kind of got to cater for the person who you're talking to. And that, I think that applies to distribution promotion as well, actually. It'd be that when it comes to people who are already using distros in this case, rather than people who aren't yet. Because if you are going to try and push the idea that your distro might actually be worth them trying out because of whatever reasons, you've got to kind of like, you've got to cater for who you're talking to, don't you? And yeah. But what I was trying to say earlier as well is that the whole, to some extent, the competition between distros or the idea that there is can be good because it leads to some innovation. But on the other hand, it can hold things back as well to some extent, depending on what we're talking about, referring to exactly. Because in general, certain things can stop progress from happening or going forward when it should.
It's really time that allows you to decide which one, you know, which was good and which was bad, because Yeah, there have been some furious, horrible fights in the free software community that, you know, people were just sure it was going to, you know, everything was going to go under, we're all going to die, and that turn out to be really important, useful arguments to have had. And so I don't want to dissuade anyone from arguing. Just, you know.
Oh, yeah, I mean, some of these arguments, it's good that they happened. But what I mean is some of the other arguments, it kind of like, it can split the communities, or it can hold progress back, and or in certain cases, it can cause what some people call fragmentation, as in like more interfaces choice, which I'm totally for. But Gnome, you know, the whole Gnome Free thing is a great example of what I mean by the so-called fragmentation that people call it. It resulted in Cinnamon, it resulted in Mate, you know. And but that, you know, I think that's a good thing because it means more choice. Only downside to more choice, of course, is from the whole, if you're going to get somebody new into the using this Linux, or, you know, they might get confused by the choice if they find out and they don't really understand. But that's about the only downside I can see to having a lot of choice when it comes to interface. So it could even be file managers, it could be distros, it could be browsers. The only thing is it can confuse people who aren't used to having so much choice because they come from Windows or whatever the reason. But in general, I think it's good to have all this choice of different programs, but as long as, of course, they're also maintained in the distributions in this case that have these packages, because having loads of packages that aren't really maintained in the repos of any distro isn't really a good thing.
I think maintaining the software and making sure that those choices are, that the choice is always a good choice. Because, I mean, you can't go wrong. You can't pick a bad window manager. They all will manage Windows. They do that fantastically. You know, you can't choose a bad distribution. They all perform a fundamental task very, very well. But if the packages aren't maintained, now we have that problem of, oh, well, this one is crap because it literally is crap because no one maintained it. And so, you know, the problem of choice is only really a problem when it's a problem of maintenance.
Yeah, I agree with that. You need to maintain these packages, otherwise you get old and it, yeah.
See, because the choice thing, you know, everyone ends up doing it. You start out with a distribution, you know, it comes the way it comes, and you mess with it for a while, and then once you start to get comfortable, that's when you start looking around. And, you know, that's a perfect time to go looking around, search it. You know, generally people are, you know, befuddled by that, but, you know, it's a feature of our community, it's not a problem. And you know, letting people know that the thing that they're going through, you know, or the thing that they chose to go through is natural, and that they don't have to do it if they don't want to. You can use the same thing all the time, no matter what, if you want, or you can go search around. You know, the repos are there, have fun. But, you know, letting them know that it's not a requirement, and letting them know that, you know, the feeling like they're swimming with a lead vest on is okay. You know, we just got to kind of let everyone know that no, the thing that's freaking you out isn't a problem. It's okay. Enjoy it.
Oh yeah, you can. You have the choice to look around. I was just wanting to go back to what you said earlier about there's not really being a bad distro, and I would say in general, sure, all distros are good or pretty much, but obviously a bad distro, I mean, depends what you mean by bad distro, but I mean, like, if somebody puts a distro on and it doesn't really work on the hardware, for example, they might think, oh, that's a bad distro. Or if they try and install it and they get sort of an error or the installer or something, or, you know, something like that goes wrong, they might think bad distro. But on a kind of related thing to the idea of bad distro, actually, I've just thought of this, certain people will think, like, at the moment, I think, you know, Ubuntu, for example, is the most popular, is a very popular distribution and the one that should be used if they're new because blah, 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 or Mint even. And if those, this, if somebody, it comes new from Windows in this, or Mac or whatever, and they install that distro on their computer, or they try to, and they get certain problems. The only downside of distros, as much as I was saying, yes, it's great to have all these distros, all this choice and all the rest of it. Another, one downside would, in this case would be if certain people try out a certain distro and they have issues, they're not just going to end up thinking that that distro is bad. They're going to actually think that the whole of Linux is bad, as in any distribution, and then they might not try out any other Linux distribution too.
There's an old adage that you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And I think that that works here. If someone is going to be deterred by any little problem, they weren't ready to move anyway. You know, they were just angry about whatever they were using at the time, but not angry enough to really do anything about it. And that's fine. And, you know, those people will come and go, and it's, you know, it's not a problem. It's not something that's wrong. It's just people being people.
Well, yeah, that's true. But here's a question. What do you think is like the best way to kind of, actually, no, you're going to say free software, probably. Do you think pure free software, realistically, if you're going to, like, win a lot of, let's say, people over from Windows, right, who have been using, you know, Netflix or using Skype or using whatever, do you think, realistically, the best way to win them over to Linux, or if they're going to even go to Linux, you know, is just give them a normal ISO with standard software? Or do you think it might be a good idea to actually pre-install some of the proprietary things, the codecs, the Skype, the, you know, what do you think is kind of like the better way to go? So kind of putting the side, maybe in this case, putting to the side a little bit the, oh, free software is the best way to go and all that, all the kind of moral aspect there. But I'm talking about from an actual user point of view. What do you think is a good way to, like, get people to come over?
It depends on how you're doing it. Like the work I do with the hardware co-op, I can't put non-free software on there and then give it away, because then that is an official entity redistributing software. And you know, I legally, people can argue that with me, but that's not something I'm willing to do, you know, for fear of, you know, legal repercussions. But what I do is when I give the computer to someone, I'm like, hey, so Flash and these kind of things aren't installed. If you want them, I can totally show you how to do that. Or if you want it, me as a person, I can do that for you. Not on behalf of this co-op, or not part of my job at the seminary or things like that. I just say, as a person, I'll totally help you out with that. But I tell them that there's, that I can't agree to the software terms for them, because then that violates the license that the people want you to go by. And then when they say, well, why can you then give me the rest of it? And I say, because those are good people, and they want me to give you that.
The license, who wants to go by the distro, or do you mean?
By installing software that is non-free, that, you know, that might be proprietary or may have certain legal issues, even though it's free software, it may be illegal in an area to install. You know, I tell them that it's there and they can get it and how to do it, but I can't by default give them a machine that does that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that can depend on, we had a little discussion about this earlier, I think, but it can depend on jurisdiction, the country and so on, but do it patents and that, or you can distribute it, but then get a license for it or whatever.
Well, it's like the Ubuntu restricted extras package. When you install that, you have to do, I know you at least have to accept the license for the Microsoft True Font type fonts. And I can't accept that on behalf of the person who is getting the computer. That's illegal. That's like me signing their mortgage on behalf of them. I can't do that. And so I don't. And what I've done in the past is taken the it's been easier now. I make a link now, but I used to put the deb for the Ubuntu restricted extras package on the desktop and would say, okay, so all the things that you really want that I can't give you are in this package. All you have to do is double click, authenticate, and it will just do its thing. And I would explain to them, I can't double click that for you because you have to agree to an end user agreement, and me not being the end user is disingenuous. And it's a moral stance I took because I don't feel that I should ever speak for anyone else other than myself.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's to do with that as well, the licenses, and you have to agree, or you're meant to agree. But if you use, but you know, somebody might change the distro and remaster it and install whatever and give it to someone. And but yeah, it's to do with the but in general, people don't really read software licenses anyway. But yeah, they should be at least skimming it or whatever. You know, they should be knowing what they're getting themselves into. And if they press accept, they should be doing it themselves rather than you basically doing it for them. I think that's what you're saying, and I pretty much agree to that.
Yeah, and it's getting easier to do. I mean, you can work all the packages, all the non-free packages together into a thing, and into one script, and say, oh, here's the script that makes all the magic things that you want to do happen. But I can't do that for you. You can run the script, but I can't do it for you.
Yeah, you can have the script there, and then click on the script if you want to do it.
Fedora has this really cool thing called Fedora doesn't. A separate entity created a thing for Fedora. It's called Easy Life, and it's a script that you run this application, and there's a checkbox, just a list of checkboxes. What are the things you want? And you click Flash, and you click this, and you click that, and you click that, and you click that. And it says, okay, cool, I'll do that for you. But it's user prompted. The user decided to do this. If they don't read the license, it's on them, not Easy Life. It's not on Fedora. It's not on the person who gave them the computer. And so, software freedom is very important to me, but so is freedom of choice. But those people have to make a choice. They can't just have a choice thrust upon them.
Yeah. And it's to do with goes to another question then. Just thinking I'm gonna word it. Yeah. Some people have the idea kind of that if you are going to give somebody, somebody from Windows, not very technical, you're gonna give them a Linux distribution. And if it doesn't run, if it doesn't run, it could be the Codex, it could be Skype, it could be Netflix, it could be maybe even Photoshop in certain cases, or some Windows software, whatever it is. But I'm referring more to kind of the like Codex, like Flash and MP3, and possibly Skype. If you give them, it's kind of like if you give them a distro by default, which of course doesn't have any of that set up, which I believe is pretty much all distros by default anyway. But if you give them that by default, some people will, some people are going to see Linux as being kind of a bad thing because of that not being there. But I think you said earlier that they weren't ready to make the switch. Actually, I think you kind of said that earlier, didn't I?
Well, and those people are not thinking about when they first got their Windows computer. Not all Windows computers come with Skype installed. Very few actually do. They all come with a link that you can install Skype. But it's not an actual, the binary is not actually sitting there running. Most systems come with Flash because, the vendors have a deal with. But if you install an OEM copy of Windows, all you get is Windows. All the rest of that stuff was put there by the manufacturer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you weren't given a choice. And I, you know, and yeah, really what it comes down to is people don't actually understand how computers work or how they're configured. You know, they don't understand. It's a magic box that shows them naked pictures of people and lets them talk to their kids. And a Linux box can be the exact same thing, but there's a step in there where they have to make a choice. They have to choose to install Skype. They have to choose to install the codecs. Yeah, and it's not that hard. And you know, again, with things like the Ubuntu Restricted Extras package, you go, oh yeah, you needed that. Yeah, just go ahead and get that thing on the desktop. And
you're waking up a bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just people are disingenuous about the problems in Linux a lot of times. Some people are legit, like there are serious problems. You know, there is hardware that's not recognized. There, you know, it's whether or not your printer works is a crapshoot. Things like that. But the little nitpick is them being disingenuous. They've had their computer for 4 years. They don't remember what it was like when they took it out of the box.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think in general to the whole idea actually of you know, getting all this? Well, it's more a Windows thing, I guess, but okay, so Windows, like we were talking about, getting all this kind of pre-installed stuff by the OEM, although it's going to apply, of course, to phones as well, because, like, you know, you've got a Samsung Android phone, for example, and you've got your Samsung thing, or HTC, you've got your HTC thing, it's not pure Android. Do you, in general... For both things, a computer with Windows or a phone with Android, do you in general kind of think? I mean, do you see the kind of reasons to have any reason to kind of have something from the manufacturer pre-installed for an average user, or do you think that actually maybe it would be better to just give them the pure experience, the default experience, no additional software? And I'm talking about both here, the Windows PC example and the Android phone as well. Do you think it's better to give them pure stock, what you get by default, nothing's been changed by any manufacturer, or do you think it's good possibly to put in some additional software or whatever it is, branding or whatever it is?
I'm of two minds. There are people who love the fact that their computer comes with a whole bunch of stuff for them to play with. At the same time, that makes things incredibly difficult because their experience from machine to machine then changes. And when you talk to regular people, they always go, oh God, it'll take forever to get my new computer set up the way my old one was. And for a lot of them, it's those little things that were installed by default that they now either one can't find because they have no idea what it was actually called, or
lost you there.
Sorry, they either can't get the software that was on there because they have no idea what it was called, or they can't you know, you can't get that software outside of the bundle. It just doesn't exist that way. There's no way to purchase it. And so a lot of people's frustrations with new computers is the thing they love and the thing we hate.
Yeah, sure.
The computer industry itself is its own worst nightmare, because the computer industry creates problems and then tries to sell solutions to it. And it doesn't work, and it hasn't been working.
You hear the dogs in the background at all?
No, I don't hear any dogs at all.
Maybe my headset's not hit. But yeah, sometimes they pick up the background noise, but obviously not this.
I'm actually surprised. I have four dogs, so usually when I hear dogs, it's a fairly normal occurrence.
But what's, Wow, there's something else I was going to talk about. What was it? Oh, my mind's gone blank. Or maybe it was to do with something to do with Windows and I did the Android phone thing. What about Android phones? Is that the same thing as a computer? Or do you think it's okay for Samsung to put their own thing in and things like that? Or do you think it's better for people? I mean, a lot of people who are probably listening to this or who might be listening to us talk in it later on, depending on what happens, are probably people who use the Nexus 7 or whatever it is, the stock Android tablet and phones and that, and don't want to have the additional whatever from the manufacturers. Do you think it's a bit different there from a computer that it's okay to have some of this stuff in the phone, or do you think it's the kind of same situation as a computer where really you're just getting stuff that isn't really needed most of the time, and there's not much point having that really, except for the companies to make money possibly?
I mean, it's the same situation. You have this thing that runs perfectly well on its own that companies are then adding to, or they're just, even if they're not adding to it, you buy a phone from a company and it comes with a bunch of pre-installed apps, and they're like, oh, you couldn't possibly live without these. And the only problem is so someone buys their first Android phone and they get it to the point where they like it. They buy the next one, and let's say in the meantime they've switched carriers, or they went from HTC to Samsung, and now the whole thing is different for no other reason than two companies did two different things to an underlying operating system.
Yeah. What do you think about the people going from Windows, because it's being slow or whatever, they used to use Windows as their main computer and, for their email and this and that, but then it got slow because of the viruses or whatever the reason, and they go off to this Android phone or maybe a tablet if they got that, or an iPad, or, what do you think of people who kind of dump their computer because it got slow and they don't really know why and they're not really interested enough to find out, and they just sort of think, I've got this other device that runs Android or whatever it is, and I can do my email there, and my basic computers, I don't need a computer really, so I'll just use my Android phone. Do you think, and I think that's happening a lot now actually, because phones and tablets and so on are a lot more popular than they used to be, and now we're getting these articles actually saying like, is a laptop not going to get sold anymore, is a desktop not going to get sold anymore, do you have an opinion about this at all?
In general, I wish the technology press would find a great big hole and leap into it, because they take things that are already a complicated situation and make them worse. But to the actual question that was asked, phones and tablets aren't computers. Functionally, a lot of times they are very close, but they're not. And for an average user, for like a, and I hate to use this generalization, but someone's mom or dad or their grandma or their, whatever, it can be perfectly fine for them because they weren't really doing anything with their computer anyway. But people that try to do their jobs from tablets often drive me nuts because they spend twice as much time trying to figure out how to do something than just doing the damn thing anyway.
Well, I guess so, but they made a switch to that because of the issues with the computer or whatever, and that's kind of brings up another subject actually, the whole operating system subject, because on a phone runs an Android, people who aren't into this stuff might not actually know what it actually runs, but phone runs Android or iOS or whatever, and your tablet can run that, and than your than a Kindle or whatever, and you know, so it goes on. So they are experiencing different operating systems, but maybe even the satellite box or something like that. But you know, they're experiencing different operating systems, but they're experiencing them on these different devices. So in a way, you might think like, oh, but they've experienced these different operating systems, these different devices, so surely making the switch on the computer to, say, Linux distribution wouldn't actually be as difficult as it would have been, but that's not, you know, it's still an issue. And what I'm trying to say is, why is it such a big jump to, like, switch operating system on the computer, even now, for most people, when they're already using different operating systems on all these other devices?
They don't realize that these other devices have operating systems, is the issue. They see their phone like they see a toaster. A toaster doesn't have an operating system. It has a button you push and it makes toast. People see their computers the same way. You know, they buy a computer, it has Windows on it. They, for the longest time, no one knew that you could put something else on them. And, you know, and now they're figuring that if there was something else to put on them, someone would sell them that. And that's really what it is they're like, well, can I just buy one of those? It's like, well, yeah, you can. I mean, you can go to System 76 and buy a Linux laptop or whatever. But, I mean, it's for the average person, it's not that they're adverse to Linux or they don't want to change. They don't know there is a change to have. And once someone does show it to them, they're like, yeah, they could take it or leave it, because that's another thing. Yeah, and they're like, I don't want to mess with this thing that already kind of works, whatever.
Yeah, there's that too. But it kind of brings up my other point. I think with a phone or something like that, it really is seen as a device. It kind of just works. But with a computer, it's kind of known that, oh, you might get a virus in Windows anyway, and there might be this issue and there might be that issue. And I think that's to do with it as well, because then the computer gets the problems, and then the other device just works, so they just make the switch to the other device.
Let's see, this is the problem, is, like, 30 years ago, you know, the computer industry told people, hey, everyone will have a computer on their desk, and it'll be this thing that just works, and we've never made that a reality, and it's... You know, and it's not going to be a reality. A computer is far too complicated of a thing for it to work 100% of the time, all the time, with no issues. Tablets and smartphones seem to be these kind of things because they're cheap, relatively, and they were marketed as consumer products. These are things that when they break, you just throw them away. You know, I don't know how many people, you know, have dropped a cell phone and been like, oh god, this cracked, I need a new one. And I'm like, why don't you just have somebody replace the screen? It's $100. And it never registered to them that this is a thing that can be worked on, that it can be maintained. And I've seen people, you know, have issues with their tablets, and they, you know, oh, you know, I start it up and it doesn't start up all the way, so I'm just going to go get a new one. When it's like all you had to do was, you know, reflash the firmware. You know, you know, it was an Android tablet. You know, it's like you just take your version of Android and you flash it back on there and boom, it works again. But these were things that no one ever thought of because the manufacturers of these devices are hoping that they never find out about this because they want to keep making money.
Yeah, I guess so. Although, I might as well say this one. Apparently, I read an article about how Microsoft were gonna possibly start selling hybrid computers with Windows 8.1 and Android as well. And I think I was going to mention this earlier, and I didn't get the chance or something. And that sounds kind of interesting because Windows 8 phone and Windows 8.1. It doesn't really sell that well, I think, was the reason as well. So I think this is a, going to buy this article anyway, it seems that they think that if they put Android on these computers, it will help sell Windows as well. What do you think to the sounds of this?
This was being bandied about several years ago also, that there were going to be these... Yeah, these... I think it was a netbook that you could pull the screen off of. And so the netbook would run Windows, and when you pulled the screen off of it, it would be an Android tablet.
And oh, it never... yeah, well, yeah, there's that as well. Yeah, we're going to show something at Consumer Electronics Show in January, according to this article. So. But, yeah. But, yeah, there is that as well now, that you can have, like, you kind of pull the thing off, and you get your keyboard, and you get your touchscreen, and it can kind of change between a computer and a tablet, and somebody had one of these computers recently, I think, and yeah.
I don't see Microsoft being cool with that at all. There may be certain manufacturers that do it, but I think Microsoft will bully them into not ever actually releasing these products, because Microsoft has a mobile operating system. You know, they have, you know, the Windows 8 for tablets and for phones.
Actually, according to this article I read, it was on OS Tastic, whatever it's called. But I think it did say something about how they were going to actually stop selling Windows RT as well, because it hasn't really worked out. So I think this is like the installer of Windows RT.
I really don't see them doing it. One, because Microsoft doesn't move that fast. Microsoft is a very, very large ship. It takes a long time to turn it. The Windows 8 interface is almost a perfect knockoff of GNOME 3. And GNOME Shell has been around, you know, what, 5-6 years at this point? Yeah, so
no,
even...
No. GNOME Shell is 5-6 years. GNOME 3, you mean? No. That's been around since, I think it was April 2011 when the first release came out. Obviously, it's been the development for longer and the development previews and things like that, but yeah, the actual final release was April 2011, I believe.
Well, I was using the pre-release versions, so...
Yeah. I used a pre-release in Mandriva 2010.2 series or whatever, and I really liked that. And annoyingly, actually, for a while, that was even when this GNOME 3.0, like the proper one, came out. For whatever reason, I can't quite remember why. I think it was still with a graphics card. Yeah, I couldn't just run GNOME 3.0. As much as I wanted to run it, I couldn't run it because the computer I was using, there was issues, and so. The closest thing I had was that old GNOME free preview that I really liked. That I was running on top of GNOME 2, and then later on I got to I actually tried GNOME 3 out at FOSDEM 2012, I think at the OpenSUSE stand or somewhere, and I was on the touchscreen, and I thought, like, you know what? I thought, oh, that's amazing on a touchscreen. Now, that's something else. Apparently, some people think, oh, it's for mobile phones, same with Unity, but I think GNOME Shell is aimed at the mobile phone market and all that, but apparently, no, it wasn't. It was aimed at the desktops, so it's not really aimed for touch. That's a little side point I wanted to make. Later on, around, I think it was, no, actually, yeah, I waited until Madea 2, I think, before I got to run GNOME Shell properly, because I tried out certain Fedora previews and so on, and development and things like that, and the disks off GNOME, and there were issues, you know, and so I actually had to wait until GNOME 3.4 before I properly started, was able to run GNOME, and it was a bit annoying because I was really interested and wanted to try out the new interface early on and properly, and then I had these issues with hardware. But we had the GNOME preview, and I remember when I had this guy over to like film my talk that I did that I mentioned in 2012 and things like that, and I showed him this GNOME preview, and he was quite into GNOME, and he's sort of saying, oh, you know, that's not very good, or time's moved on since that, and I think I had to get, and I had to get used to the actual GNOME shell final, a bit, because of, it being obviously different from this preview, but yeah, I'm a GNOME free user by choice normally, but in a distro that actually is seen as being a KDE distribution by many, even though GNOME is there as well and it's quite supported, and so that's kind of interesting as well, because I'm like running GNOME free in a distro which is seen as a KDE distro by a lot of people, even though GNOME is supported. And GNOME is going to always be, or for now, it's always going to be slightly behind because of this one being on a 9-month release cycle, whereas GNOME being on a 6-month release cycle, so they don't quite fit in together. That was one nice thing about Ubuntu when I used to run it, because it would be so close to the GNOME 2 release cycle that, you know, you'd always get a later GNOME as you upgraded. He's lit.
Yep. I forgot what our point was.
I don't know. We're just chatting about different things, and then we'll go off whenever. I think they're going to put all this out as well. It's been like 4 hours nearly, hasn't it?
Or something. Ken's going to be pissed.
Yeah, but they're not going to release it all in one go. They might just, oh, we need a podcast. Let's put this up. Or I don't know, whatever they're going to do anyway.
Let's put up 8 hours of after show.
I don't know, when are you planning on going off or whatever?
I have no plan. I woke up earlier than I planned to today, so I've got like 7 hours that are open.
Oh. Yeah, I'm a bit like that as well, but 7 hours of after show. I don't know if we'll do all 7 hours.
I mean, we could always convince someone to stop the recording and bullshit later or something or whatever. I don't know.
Or they can, I don't know. Or they didn't bother releasing this.
Or they can cut this out and make it its own episode.
Although when I podcasted the first time, I went on Tech Bytes in, you heard this guy before, Roy Sestowich? Yeah, Tech Rights. Have you heard of Tech Rights? Or Tech Rights, does that mean anything to you?
I think I've heard of it.
Or the old name, Boycott Novel. Yeah?
That means even less.
he does these blog posts that are a bit, what's the word? That annoys certain people a bit, let's put it that way, depending what he puts up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Controversial,
yeah,
that's the word, isn't it? Controversial. And, he annoys certain people with these blog posts, but that's what he does. And, at times, anyway. And, he has his podcast and, Tech Bytes with the other guy, and, don't always guests, and I hadn't really podcasted, and then I did an episode. I went on with him one night in September. It's still out there, and September 2011. And I thought, you know, okay, this is gonna, I hadn't done podcasting. We had to do it over Skype, which was a bit, the sound quality was a bit bad at times, as you respect. But you know, I went on this podcast, and I think he was only in for about an hour or two, and put the music in and, you know, release it as a podcast. And so first bit, this is all before I joined any Magia teams and so on. This is like me deciding like, I'm into this Magia, I think I am, but I'm not going to join any teams or whatever yet. And so I just basically did a podcast about, oh, it was very general. It was about distros, GNOME, KDE, Identicare, you know, loads of stuff, and it's like an opinion podcast and stuff. And got first bit was went around different subjects, and it's quite a good podcast. And we got through about halfway, and he's like, right, we're gonna have a break, and it's kind of like, oh, we've got so much left. And then he kind of wanted to close the show off, But I thought, you know, I'm kind of like warmed up now. I'm used to this podcast thing. I'm probably not going to be on here for a while again. So, we just kind of like chatted for another hour and an hour and a bit, mate, that. And the podcast ended up being over 3 hours of chat and music got put in later on and kind of said to me at the end, do you want to, cut this out or do you want to release it? And, I was like, you know, no, yeah, I want to release it. I want to release the whole thing. Okay, it's a bit long at 3 hours, isn't it? But, I've got it released. And the thing is, with a podcast, you can pause it and so on. So it's not that big a deal, really, is it? A long podcast.
Yeah, when I was doing Linux Cranks, we used to do shows that were, you know, 6-7 hours long. Because, you know, it was a show as long as someone was talking. And we tended to do it late at night, so people would get hammered drunk, too. So that was always fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I kind of aimed for here, but 7 hours, ugh. I should do a bit more podcasting again, really. To be honest, I hadn't done any since the last New Year show, because I've been other things and so on, you know, and... Like public speaking a bit here and there and whatever, but you kind of forget, you know what, actually podcasting is quite fun because, you know, you just talk about whatever and get your opinions out and so on, and you kind of forget, or you might sort of forget if you're not doing it for a while, you know?
Yeah, I used to do a lot of podcasting, but I keep swearing I'm going to get back to it, and I never do.
Although Thistle Web was looking for guests on a Cribbins, I've been on that as well with one of our main media contributors, and met him twice because of FOSDEM. But he put System D in the distro and Pulse Audio, and he contributes upstream, and then he's got his other interests too, and he's like, you know, he's a great guy. And and we did a Cribbins episode, a media special. That must be 2012 now. Yeah, time goes on, doesn't it? So I did that with Thistle Web and Kebby, the co-host, and that was good as well. But Thistle Web was saying he was going to have he wanted to have 100th episode or whatever he was saying of his podcast, in February. So I plan to go on that as well. He wanted a round table of different speakers, different people. And Kay, the guy wants to stop and restart the recording. In the top.
Yeah. I say we don't let him do it.
What do you want to finish?
Oh, with K-Wisher? I just want to make his life miserable.
Oh, you mean because they want to put in 2 hour episodes or what they're going to do? What do you mean?
I've known K-Wisher for a while. I'm just trying to cause trouble.
K-Wisher, come. Are you going to chat? It's kind of weird. It's just two in the way at the end, but oh well.
K-Wisher, why don't you come on here and make us stop?
3:30 wants to go on another 12 hours. I don't know how HPR is going to deal with that. In fact, no, we're going to do another 26 hours. It's going to be longer than the actual thing. So... I don't know how HBR is going to handle that.
We're just going to take over the whole thing. We're going to kick Ken Fallon out. We're just going to... Just me and you the whole way. Thelma and Wheelie style. We're just going to ride off into the sunset.
Yeah, I'm not really doing much today either, to be honest. Did you have plans for later? Is that what you said?
I try to plan very little. My life is so planned at this point that I don't want to make plans for anything.
Yeah. I can only be like that as well, I think, in general.
There's a kind of growing problem with people involved in the technology sphere that we cram our lives so full of things that we have to actually schedule time to not have a scheduled time. I mean, I've had to schedule time to drink beer with my friends, and that's sad.
I didn't really have that issue, but I know what you mean.
Enjoy it while you can, because it may sneak back up on you.
I think, have you been, when did you wake up? Or, oh, you actually woke up early, didn't you? Yeah. Because you're like hours behind as well, aren't you?
I was rudely awakened by you people at like 7 o'clock. I fell asleep with the stream on.
Oh, so, right, yeah.
So God knows what's been crammed down into my subconscious now.
I plan to actually listen to the podcast when it's released, like the whole thing or nearly. I was going to do that last year, and then I got through a few of those episodes, and then it's like, I didn't listen to all of it. It's still out there somewhere, though.
It will always be out there. See, I think it's all on archive.org, so it may always be there.
Yeah, well, it'll be around for a while, yeah.
So as much as I dislike the wage system and, you know, things like that, I would love to become rich for no other reason than to give the guy that runs archive.org a heap of cash.
I wonder if anyone's actually going to, like, listen to, well, this particular bit of the podcast.
This particular bit? I hope not. I hope people have far better things to do with their life than to listen to me ramble on.
Or this particular bit.
If you're listening to me, stop. Find a partner of any type. Please have sex.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Ah, he's on. That's cool.
Ah, thought if I called you out, you might show up.
Yeah. Oh, you got him to come, did you? Or called him out?
I've been recording for like 10, it's coming up on 10 hours.
How long are you recording now? It doesn't look like it.
Well, I got another bot, the Z-Record bot.
One like nearly 4 hours of after stuff.
Yeah, but anyway, I've been recording since I went to bed last night, so I got like 10 hours going right now. I'd like to stop that and start again at the top of the hour, just to get Ken the file.
You know, you don't have to restart at the top of the hour. You can just let all of this die.
That's true.
Yeah, but they want to actually release it, I think, because that's the whole point, isn't it, of HPR.
I think there were about maybe 20 or 30 minutes there that were really good in, like, the last bit of this. But yeah, a lot of that should probably just die.
Well, I'll leave that up to Ken.
No, I can release it or whatever. Might as well. I don't know if we're going to do another 3 hours, which we were kind of joking about, though.
Ken just wants all of it so that he can take individual words and piece them together to make us say things and then blackmail us.
He is the evil overlord.
Maybe it should go on longer next year or next one, but we really kind of do that anyway with the people who want to stay at the end.
30 seconds. Good night, Gracie.
Good night, John Boy.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.